Nah, we don't. Just no, don't worry about it.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, September 28, 2023. This is your award-winning Gibbonation Media Assassination, episode 1594.
This is No Agenda.
Dodging the large language models and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where we've noticed they've gone nuts in Canada, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
This is the best thing that could have happened.
Hey, you know, Canada wants to get more coverage on our show.
Yeah, they'll do anything. It's absolutely the best. And we saw this happen. I kept getting on notes from people. I'm like, well, we don't really have any reports, you know, because we deconstruct media. I'll just kick this off with two short ones from ABC. So here's earlier in the week.
Also in Canada, an uproar after a former Nazi got a standing ovation in the Canadian Parliament. It all started when Ukraine's president spoke to lawmakers. Then the Speaker of the House praised a 98-year-old Ukrainian man who once served in a Nazi unit accused of genocide. The man's past had apparently not been vetted. The Speaker apologized, but is facing calls to resign.
And then the next report.
There's new fallout after a former Nazi was invited to the Canadian Parliament and got a standing ovation. It happened while Ukraine's president was visiting. The Speaker of the House, who invited the 98-year-old former Nazi from Ukraine, has now resigned for not properly vetting that guest.
Yeah, I have the poignant clips, including three kind of chronological clips, because Trudeau said one thing, then he came out and said another thing, and then he came into the front of the House. But what was wrong with that report, and it was that classic example of mishandled, he got two standing ovations, not one.
Ooh, well, can I just say one thing? That whole parliament, everybody there, should just be wiped away. They're all dumb. How dumb are these people? Don't you? First of all, it's not the Russians. It was the Soviets. They're dumb. They're completely brainwashed and stupid.
As I pointed out in the newsletter in one of the photos.
Yes.
These people giving the standing ovation, including members of the military, high-ranking members of the military that were sitting next to this guy, clapping away like trained seals.
Yeah, and not, I mean, but literally, hands above their head. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, F Russia, F Putin. Hello, dummies.
Hello. Man, are they dumb?
And I think you saw the speaker hesitate for a second. He had like this little. I think he realized when he was reading, he fought against the Russians. Wait a minute. You could just see something in his brain.
Well, I have that. Okay. I have that.
All right. I'll let you know.
I didn't notice that. I thought he was just robotically reading the what was put in. And by the way, before we play any of these clips, I've got four of them.
Oh, good.
I think he was set up.
Huh.
There's no doubt in my mind that this whole thing was a setup to humiliate the Liberal Party.
Well, that worked. And they did some humiliation of their own later.
Well, their own party is the one that stood up and clapped the loudest. And then the guy who is the speaker of the House, not the speaker, but the head of the opposition, he's just all in on this war. You can tell when you hear him. I got a clip of him.
Too. Yeah, okay, that's not a bad theory that you have there, that this was set up. Not to get rid of the speaker per se, but to embarrass the liberals in the
and embarrass both parties, but it embarrassed the government of Canada.
Yes.
And how did it come to be? We've never had a full explanation. Supposedly some speakers had a friend and somebody suggested it. This sounds like a setup to me.
It started with, no, I noticed him in the gallery. Oh, boy. Look, there's my guy, 98 years old, Nazi hunter. I mean, oops.
Okay, so we'll start with Trudeau House Speaker. This is the trigger. This is the speech that highlighted him and got him the two rounds of standing ovations.
We have here in the chamber today Ukrainian-Canadian world veteran, from the Second World War, who fought the Ukrainian independence against the Russians.
Oops.
and continues to support the troops today, even at his age of 98. He's an Ukrainian hero, a Canadian hero, and we thank him for all his service. Thank you.
So that was Trudeau.
No. That was the Speaker of the House.
Okay, I was confused. Oh,
he has a sound. I know he sounds like him.
Yeah.
It could have been. I mean, the voice is almost identical. But no, that was not Trudeau. So here's Trudeau right after this happens. This is the first thing Trudeau does when he freaks out. And this is Trudeau Nazi apology.
Obviously, it's extremely upsetting that this happened. The speaker has acknowledged his mistake and has apologized. But this is something that is deeply embarrassing to the Parliament of Canada and, by extension, to all Canadians. I think particularly of Jewish MPs and all members of the Jewish community across the country who are celebrating commemorating Yom Kippur today. I think it's going to be really important that all of us push back against Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation, and continue our steadfast and unequivocal support for Ukraine, as we did last week with announcing further measures to stand with Ukraine in Russia's illegal war against it.
Hey, happy Yom Kippur, everybody. Russia bad.
Did that one end with the Russia disinformation complaint?
Yeah, that's how it ended. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, so then he has to backtrack on that because he got a bunch of flack from before he goes in front of Parliament. We have producer Nicholas sent me this note with a timeline.
Wait, Nick sends you stuff too?
He does. All these guys do this. They're all bipolar.
No, they send stuff to me. They send stuff to you. I mean, we do have some of the same clips, which people, you got to be careful. If you send it to both of us, then send it
often doesn't get played at all.
Right. But that's only if we're both on the email. But they send it to you and send it to me separately. Then we actually both wind up with the same clips.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Don't do that, people. You choose one. All right.
So he goes on, he mentions that the Polish ambassador made a plea for an apology from the government that recognizes Polish grievances. Rota resigned after this, the clip we just heard. You know, he says, well, he's still there. But then he resigned afterwards. And after he resigned, we got the second version of the same apology by Trudeau. And this is Trudeau's Nazi revised apology. In this case, what he did was he took in everybody who felt aggrieved and even people who didn't feel aggrieved. He put them on this list of I'm sorry to you and you and you and you and you.
In a few moments, I will address the House in front of all Canadians, in front of Jewish people here and around the world, and Ukrainians, to offer Parliament's unreserved apologies for what happened on Friday. The Speaker was solely responsible for the invitation and recognition of this man, and has wholly accepted that responsibility and stepped down. This was a mistake that has deeply embarrassed Parliament and Canada. All of us who were in this house on Friday regret deeply having stood and clapped, even though we did so unaware of the context. It was a horrendous violation of the memory of the millions of people who died in the Holocaust, and it was deeply, deeply painful for Jewish people. It also hurt Polish people, Roma people, 2SLGBTQI+ people, disabled people, racialized people, and the many millions who were
targeted. No, stop. This is edited. This is edited. He did not say two-spirit people, disabled people. Did he?
Yes.
No.
It's not edited. Believe me.
This is crazy. Let me hear this again.
And it was deeply, deeply painful for Jewish people. It also hurt Polish people, Roma people, 2SLGBTQI+ people, disabled people, racialized people, and the many millions who were targeted by the Nazi genocide.
Nicholas, you're off my list. I can't believe you gave that clip to John.
No, he didn't give me any clips.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. He's back on the list. This is dynamite. In fact, I got to give this to you right away. clip of the day. I mean, if you had told me that was AI, I would have believed it too. That's crazy.
He went nuts.
The Nazis were going after two-spirited people? Really? We had two spirits back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Oh, everything man. In between.
Wow.
So then he goes to Parliament.
How about dwarfs? We should have had the dwarfs.
You're right, because dwarfs would have been on the should be on the list.
Yeah, gypsies.
He's got to go back and redo this.
He said Roma, so that way he just said gypsies. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'll be quiet now. That's crazy. What an idiot.
So then he goes to so the guy, the head of the opposition, who's Pierre, his last name is, I had it written down and I put it, it's on the other desk, but it's a interesting name, Polier or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. But the Polier, I think the Polier.
And so he condemns Trudeau, and then Trudeau comes out, and now you hear the apology, the official apology in front of Parliament. And it's lame.
It was the personal responsibility of the Prime Minister to invite President Zelensky to the floor of this House of Commons. It was his personal responsibility to make sure it was a diplomatic success. It was his personal responsibility to continue to lead the government that has the security, intelligence, and diplomatic agencies that could have and should have vetted all individuals who were present and recognized. Yet this Prime Minister allowed for a monumental, unprecedented, and global shame to unfold in this chamber.
Shame.
Will he take personal responsibility for this shame and personally apologize on behalf of himself?
Right. The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of all of us in this House, I would like to present unreserved apologies for what took place on Friday and to President Zelensky and the Ukrainian delegation for the position they were put in. For all of us who were present, to have unknowingly recognized this individual was a terrible mistake and a violation of the memory of those who suffered grievously at the hands of the Nazi regime.
Oh, Canada, I love you.
So that was that. And so we have one more go around. This is obviously question time. They do this in England. They do it in Canada. Here he comes back up and to ask, you know, see if he can clarify it a little bit. Nothing, he gets nothing. And I could have gone on longer with this, but this will be the final clip because it just pretty much ends here with Trudeau apologizing on behalf of everybody, not himself.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Did the Prime Minister's national security, intelligence, or diplomatic officials vet the names of the people that the Prime Minister allowed within mere feet of President Zelensky?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
What?
Mr. Speaker, the privilege and responsibilities and rights of parliamentarians are sacrosanct, and that the Leader of the Opposition would be suggesting that any visitor to this House should be vetted by the government of the day is actually a grievous attack on the rights and privileges of parliamentarians. However, if the Leader of the Opposition or the Speaker or anyone wants our intelligence agencies to vet any of their guests, we would be more than happy to do that in respect of parliamentary rights.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, there's one thing for sure, is this distracted from the former Indian diplomat who claimed that Trudeau's plane at the recent G20 meeting was full of cocaine. You hear about this?
No, I missed that one. Yeah, so it obviously did distract. Good work.
Oh, yeah. No, it totally distracted from that. There was one thing that was fun. One of the Canadian liberals from the Liberal Party jumped up and suggested the following.
I would like to ask for unanimous consent to adopt the following motion. That notwithstanding any standing order, special order, or usual practice of the House, the recognition made by the Speaker of the House of an individual present in the galleries during the joint address to Parliament by His Excellency Volodymyr Zelensky be struck from the appendix of the House of Commons debates of Thursday, September 21st, 2023, and from any House multimedia recording.
So they want it, yeah. They want this it erased.
This, by the way, this was semi-scandalous that she did this.
Of course it is. That's insane. Oh, we got to delete it, get rid of it. Now, what isn't happening, what should happen from this, and, you know, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, of course, they were all over Twitter, X. You know, like, oh, this is insane. This is no good. I mean, and I think that's where your setup was. But they need to go a step further. Where's the Azov Brigade? This is the moment to bring it in. Hey, there's still a lot of Nazi sentiment over there. There's people fighting on behalf of the Ukrainian army who have swastikas tattooed on their body and are very much in line with World War II Nazis.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
But why isn't anyone picking that up?
Well, slow down the money.
Well,
the money.
Speaking of such,
what are you trying to do? What are you on?
Let's go to 60 Minutes and talk about the money.
The U.S. has spent just over $43 billion on military aid to Ukraine since Russia invaded.
I think it's more than that, isn't it? Or was that maybe just the military aid?
And this is a number that the real number is over a trillion.
A trillion?
A trillion? I believe it's.
That's new to me. I've heard 150 billion. I've heard, but a trillion? Nah.
No, I think it's one. I think, yeah.
With a T, tango.
I'm pretty sure I could be. I mean, it's not 1.3 billion. It's got to be.
No.
If it's 1.3 anything, it's over.
No, not what point. It's 100. I understand it to be 143 billion. She's saying 40 something billion. A trillion is, that's 1,000 billion. Okay, well, that's a lot. That's a lot.
The point is, it's a fluctuating number that nobody seems to be able to have a handle
that's
on.
The point, yeah, the point
and
is,
every
we don't
time
know.
Somebody wants a handle on the number, Rand Paul.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
say, nah, we don't, just don't worry about it.
we'll have AI check it out. Don't worry. We're going to figure it all out.
That's equivalent to about 5% of the American defense budget. European countries combined have contributed around $30 billion. American rocket launchers are now reaching deep into Russian-occupied Ukraine. And the Patriot air defense system is shielding millions of Ukrainian civilians from airstrikes. American taxpayers are financing more than just weapons.
Oh.
We discovered the U.S. government's buying seeds and fertilizer for Ukrainian farmers and covering the salaries of Ukraine's first responders, all 57,000 of them. Russia's invasion shrank Ukraine's economy by about a third. We were surprised to find that to keep it afloat, the U.S. government is subsidizing small businesses. In total, America's pumped nearly $25 billion of non-military aid into Ukraine's economy since the invasion began.
So I consider this to be a hit piece on this whole phony baloney setup that we're paying for. It is 60 Minutes, so that's the CIA broadcasting systems. If we believe Seymour Hersh, and I have no reason not to, there is an internal conflict or a conflict between CIA and the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. We talked about on the last show. CIA is saying everyone's dead. There's no one fighting back. There's no war. It's over. It's effectively over. DIA, you're going too far. You got your money. You got your 143, whatever it is, billion. Stop. And of course, they're not stopping. So I think this is a hit piece, and that may become more clear in the third clip. Here's two.
And you can see it working at the bustling farmers market on John McCain Street in central Kyiv.
Are you starting to get the idea? John McCain Street?
Of Ukraine, this is your moment.
The late senator is revered in Ukraine because he pushed the U.S. government to start sending arms to the country after Russia first invaded, back in 2014.
We need to
While in Kyiv, we learned that three of McCain's former colleagues were also in town. Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren and Richard Blumenthal and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
It's a cool takedown because it's taking down the Republicans, which is also correct because these people are evil.
They don't normally agree on much. Together, though, they're some of the staunchest supporters of U.S. funding for Ukraine's resistance.
They're on track to break the Russian army. And the only way they could possibly lose is if we pull the plug on them.
The wreckage of Russia's war machine was on display for Ukraine's Independence Day celebrations, even as almost a fifth of the country remains under occupation.
People ask me, is it worth it? Here's what we've gotten for our investment. We haven't lost one soldier. We reduced the combat power of the Russian army by 50%. And not one of us has died in that endeavor. This is a great deal for America.
When he says not one of us, he's talking about not one of the senators, obviously.
You've previously said that it's the best money we've ever spent. That's still true?
Since we helped Churchill stand up to the Nazis.
We have to have confidence.
By the way, the illogic of all this is just fascinating.
Well, people have no knowledge of history. See Canadian Parliament.
Well, besides that, I mean, there's the illogic of, well, we're running a war, but we haven't lost any soldiers. So that's great. As people are dying by the hundreds, by the thousands.
Oh, but they're Ukrainians. They don't count. You see,
I mean, it's a very patronizing kind of, it's sick. It's basically sick.
Yes, I agree.
We have to have confidence that the dollars we're spending are actually being spent in defense of the nation. All of that is important. But that's...
Well, we just heard that they're not. They're not being spent in defense of the nation. They're being spent to keep small businesses afloat, all kinds of other stuff.
But that's why we're here.
Uh-huh.
The senators and other U.S. officials told us there have been no substantiated cases of American weapons being diverted.
Okay, but then CBS 60 Minutes throws this out.
But Ukraine is a young democracy with a history of corruption. According to the monitoring group Transparency International, it's ranked the second most corrupt country in Europe. Only Russia scores lower. An American hotline for Ukrainians to report misuse of assistance from U.S. aid saw a tenfold increase when these posters went up across the country earlier this year. American officials are now investigating four criminal cases involving non-military aid. And 170 Ukrainian government officials, including high-ranking military officers, have been charged in corruption cases so far this year for crimes like embezzlement and accepting bribes. Ukraine is losing U.S. weapons on the battlefield. But Lieutenant Shershin told us that's the only way they're losing them.
Has anything gone missing?
In my situation, in my company, in our battalion, I don't know the case like this.
Yeah, okay. So I think this is a setup. This is a bit of a hit piece. It's like, no, you guys are over there. The Uniparty, this corruption, you know, this is what the, you know, we're also funding their whole economy, apparently. We can't fund our own economy. Now, this is what gets people riled up. People get mad about this stuff. So it feels to me like CBS, CIA broadcasting.
It does have a funny feeling because that's why the Lindsey Graham thing triggered me, because it's like, why would you put that in there in the first place? You bring in, this is a common way of doing it. You bring in a person who acts despicable, which is exactly what he did.
Yeah.
And present him, hey, look at this. And then so it gets everybody to despise him because it's like a despicable thing to say what he did, what he said.
And he's already so despisable.
Yeah, he's very despisable.
Despisable. So then more CBS.
You do that. The point is you do that on purpose.
Yes. Oh, completely. Or as the kids would say, 100%. So now we go to CBS Face the Nation, And let's rile people up a little more.
Ukrainian President Zelensky and his wife Olena visited Washington last week to press the case for more U.S. assistance in Ukraine's fight against the Russian invasion. We spoke with the First Lady during their visit with the aid of a Ukrainian government interpreter. We began by asking her about what life is like for Ukrainian children.
By the way, I don't think Margaret Brennan, who's, you know, the news model in this case, I don't think she's really aware that she's helping the demise of the narrative here.
Unfortunately, only 1/3 of Ukrainian children can now attend school because our schools have to be safe, to be located in safe areas, and we need schools with bomb shelters, and my foundation continues fundraising.
Well, he'll stop again. Another little tidbit here in terms of I'm going to go along with your whole thesis.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to use these mechanisms to do a hit piece and then compound it with the Margaret Brennan show, there are a lot of different people that you can have do the translation.
Yes.
But to have some sad sack come on with this pathetic voice,
mm-hmm.
you don't need that. You could have an up-tempo, lifting, you know, a kind of a positive spirited person doing the translation and says someone who sounds like she's going to start to cry any second.
Yeah.
That's done for another. That's also done purposefully. Can we find a translator? Hey, Bill, can we find a translator that sounds so sad?
Yeah. And it's and you know, and so I think when you air these answers, I think people at home just six pack sit home going, our schools suck. What? And and she's not wearing fatigues like Volodymyr. You know, she's dressed nicely. She was in Vogue. This is shades of dip like the Assad woman. The Assad fiat, which they also took down. So, and like, and then it's her foundation. Wait a minute. What? We're not giving money to your foundation? It's one thing to give money to the country, to the military. I can even kind of see the emergency services, but now we got to give to your foundation? What is this? Why? That makes no sense.
It's like the Clinton Foundation.
Thank you.
Our schools have to be safe, to be located in safe areas. And we need schools with bomb shelters. And my foundation continues fundraising resources to ensure that we have comfortable bomb shelters in all Ukrainian schools.
Comfortable bomb shelters. We need comfortable bomb shelters. You know, our kids need to be comfortable.
Well, the rest of Ukrainian children, 2/3, continue going to school online because they live in kind of frontline areas. Many children left Ukraine, they live abroad. When children were leaving Ukraine.
Now, by the way, there's a mistake here that they're making, or it's purposeful. What we kept hearing was the Russians kidnapped tens of thousands of children. The Russians kidnapped them. Now we're hearing something else.
Well, there was, well, wait, I'll take the side of the narrative.
If you must.
There was a lot of complaining about the Russians kidnapping the kids out of the Donbass in that area, but the other kids, there's still a shitload, probably more kids that like fled to, in the early days, fled to Poland
and Germany. Moldova. Yeah, all those places. Yeah. So something's off.
I don't think it's inaccurate.
Well, something's off about this whole interview.
In the frontline areas, many children left Ukraine. They live abroad.
That's your front line, the frontline areas. That's the Donbass region. Many of them live abroad. What happened to the kidnapped by Russia narrative? It should be in here if it was an anti-Russian.
Well, if they're going to talk about, if she's going to drop the front line.
Mm-hmm.
There's no kids around any of that area.
When children were leaving Ukraine, sometimes they could only take their documents with them and left everything behind. That is why both children and teachers require laptops, require iPads to continue
iPads.
Education. And we receive a lot of support, including from our American partners.
What?
Yeah, they need iPads.
Nobody needs an iPad.
They need iPads. Send your money to my foundation. The kids need iPads. See? And well, anyway, Face the Nation then put this in because, you know, the last bit we're sending is the tactical missiles, the ones that have some reach.
We go now to Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly. He is in Austin, Texas.
Double whammy.
This morning, CBS has confirmed that President Biden, in his meeting with President Zelensky, said he would provide Ukraine with ATACMS. These are these longer-range surface-to-surface missile systems that would allow them to hit behind Russian lines. The Ukrainians have been asking for months for these systems. Whether it's the F-16s or the ATACMS now, are you frustrated at how long
leading the witness
it takes for approval to happen for these systems?
Yeah, I mean, this conflict's been going on for a year and a half now. Yes. And in the beginning, we provided artillery, ammunition, eventually HIMARS. F-16s are not like other weapon systems. They're complicated. You have to train pilots. You have to train maintainers. I worked with the administration on that. We've gotten them cluster weapons now.
Yeah.
ATACMS is an additional capability. There were some issues we had to work through. They've been, you know, stressing the need for this over a period of time now, and we're at the point that we're going to provide them this capability, and I think it's going to be helpful.
What restrictions should there be? You know, why the apprehension for so long?
Well, an artillery shell goes about 18 miles. An ATACMS missile goes about 190 miles. So there was concern where and against what targets would they use them. We don't want this to escalate. But we're at the spot right now where they need an additional capability to maintain some more progress. The progress on this counteroffensive, it's been good. You know, I talked to Ukrainian commanders. There are things that are, you know, starting to provide some, you know, problems, but we're making progress there.
What does that mean? I think they set him up. All right, you're in charge of that. So whatever happens with those ATACMS, it's a cool name, acronym, but ATACMS, whatever happens, yeah, some problems, but it's okay. No. Meanwhile, reports that 10,000 Ukrainian soldiers have surrendered to the Russians using the special Volga frequency, which is 149.2 megahertz, which you can basically get on your handset. What are those $25 radios we started off with? You have one in your desk drawer.
I have one. I have a couple of them laying around.
Yeah, what's the cheapo called again?
Bifan, I think, or Biofeng.
Baofeng.
They're Chinese. They're cheap Chinese gear. And they're good.
Yeah, Baofeng. Yeah.
Baofeng. Yeah, and the batteries last forever. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, so now they have a frequency 149.2 megahertz. You just call and say, hey, want to surrender? It's over.
They're probably using that particular gear.
Yeah, of course. Of course. No, I'm with Hirsch. I really think that it's so, it may go on forever, but only as a demilitarized zone and just a bunch of posturing and, you know, no real fighting. I just don't think there's fighting going on. Have you seen any recent footage of fighting and wins or losses or anything? No, we're not seeing that anymore.
I didn't see much fighting to begin with.
No. Well, no, we never really. Well, I mean, on my military contact, I must have 50 videos of Abrams tanks, all these tanks getting blown up, just sitting ducks, drone footage of Abrams tanks getting, you know, droned. I mean, none of this seems to have worked very well at all. So. And of course, this report, which I have a semi-clip from the American Journal. It's a poor read, but at least we can laugh about it.
Zelensky asks Marina Abramovich to be ambassador for Ukraine. Now, apparently this story was removed from the Telegraph, but that's where it was originally posted. But they've since scrubbed the internet of it. We've had to go to Wayback Machine version, the archive, to get it here. Volodymyr Zelensky has asked Marina Abramovich, the quote, performance artist to be an ambassador for Ukraine. Ms. Abramovich, a fierce critic of Vladimir Putin's illegal invasion, said the Ukrainian president had asked her for help in rebuilding schools. Oh, rebuilding schools.
So Marina Abramovich, and who herself has claimed that Zelensky wants her to be an ambassador to the children, not like an official ambassador, which I think this guy gets wrong. And most people immediately associate her with the spirit cooking and the, you know,
yes,
the blood stuff.
Yes, and I have not straightened out this story. I mean, I've seen references to it, but I'm glad you picked up on it and you could just, yes, that's right. That's who that is. The spirit cooking woman where you throw a bunch of dead guts on the wall or something.
well,
when you eat it.
What's interesting about her, and I want to remind everybody, she ties back directly to the Podesta clan.
No, she ties totally. Yes, that's where it
Podesta
came from.
And the Clintons.
Yeah.
So this cannot be coincidental, or, you know, it seems totally like her huge ego. Like, yeah, I'm a part of this. Hey, guys, let me in on the scam.
There's something sketchy about her even being mentioned. Whether this is any of this is even true, it could all be a setup. That transgender guy dude
who got fired.
I never believed that she ever worked there.
No, I don't either. No, that just,
this whole thing seems like bull crap from the get go.
Yeah. So I can take us from there, unless you have anything else on Ukraine. I think no. We've handled it for today. I can take us to what's going on with migration around the world.
I do have one little thing I wanted to get out of the way in Ukraine.
Sure.
And this is mostly about the Russians. And you have to do a search, because it's from two or three shows ago, on the Cubans, supposedly, that the Russians are kidnapping and forcing into soldierdom to fight in the war. Have you heard this one?
No, and I'm trying to find. It would be under Cuban?
It'd be Cuban or goodness, Cuba.
You have like a whole bunch of clips here. Oh, no, I see. Here we go.
Cuban authorities have uncovered an international human trafficking ring. The victims are being sent overseas to fight for Russia in the war against Ukraine. That's according to a statement by Cuban authorities released on Monday. Cuba's foreign ministry said Cuba is not part of the war in Ukraine, and Cuba will act against human trafficking aimed at recruiting Cubans as mercenaries. Cuban state-run media added this.
The Interior Ministry detected and is working on the neutralization and dismantling of a human trafficking network.
Cuba said it had already begun prosecuting cases in which its citizens had been coerced into fighting in Ukraine. A Cuban resident gave his take on the matter.
Cuba is against all illegal human trafficking. People said it was to send them to war in Ukraine. The Cuban revolution is against that.
And if true, this could mean Russia is having trouble recruiting people from its own citizens. But why Cuba? Russia has long-standing political ties with communist Cuba, and Cuban citizens often migrate to Russia for economic opportunities. Russia is also looking elsewhere for help in its war against Ukraine. On Monday, U.S. National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson said North Korea leader Kim Jong-un and Russian President Vladimir Putin could be planning to meet.
Clearly, Russia running short of our ammunition right now and having to go to North Korea.
Patricia Lewis, the head of the International Security Program at the think tank Chatham House, explained that North Korea may want more Chatham than just currency.
Obviously, it would like real high-tech missile technology, etc. It may also want a show of strength with Russia, such as military exercises, naval exercises, and so on. That may be part of the discussions.
Yeah, all of these people, all of these think tanks, these NGOs, they're all in on the game. They're all getting paid for participating in this play What do you think the significance of this was that you bring this up? I thought
there's something very phony about it.
Yeah.
To incorporate the North Korea, Putin, Kim meeting, that sort of thing, that always seemed like bull crap. And the fact that they have, oh, we have to go to North Korea for high-tech weaponry. What?
Right, right.
This is like, does this make sense to anyone with a normal brain?
It's the same. Well, it's the same type of misinformation, disinformation that the CIA brought in with MI6, I'm sure.
MI6 is Chatham House.
Yeah, that Putin was suffering from cancer, Parkinson's. He's almost dead. He's going to keel over
this.
Yeah,
a big list.
Yeah, what happened to that, American news media? What happened to that? Oh, look at his head. It's all puffy because he's taking cancer meds. He's going to die. No.
So this seemed to be part of the narrative that, oh, Russia's hard up for getting people. They're all leaving the country and nobody wants to fight for Putin. And so he's got to involve himself with the word Cuba. Human trafficking.
This is key.
It's to make it look bad, obviously. And Cubans, you know, these dumb Cubans, I guess, I don't know how they got wrapped up in it. There was a bunch of them living in Russia. That shows if you move to Russia, you're going to get, you know, grabbed and thrown in
rousted.
The army.
Rousted, yes.
Rousted. I mean, this is unbelievable how extreme this storyline is.
You have a kicker here, 14-second kicker.
Yeah, see what it is.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on Tuesday said that it says a lot that Russia is trying to obtain weapons from North Korea in September 2023, especially for a war that Russia said would be over in a week.
No, is this propaganda? It's just
but it's such dubious property. Does anybody believe that Russia, who just came short of going to the moon, and still is the Soyuz spacecraft the only way we can get to our own space station is using this Russian device? It said once in a while SpaceX can send somebody up. No. That they have to go to North Korea, the crazy North Korea to get weapon. Come on, it's crazy to even think that, but they're pushing it.
That means they're desperate.
The desperation is in Jake Sullivan's side of the equation.
Oh man, I didn't clip it, but Anthony Blinken was at some White House function and he plays blues guitar on stage, does a blues song.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he's like, and it's not bad. I'll give him that. But
I'm sure you a lot of people can play blues guitar.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. I got below the mirror some more bullets. Da, 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 da. Boy, he's shooting them all. Da, 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 da. Putin ain't looking so good no more. Yeah. So the human trafficking angle is being used, overused around the world. And a paper surfaced. Paper from 2000 from the United Nations. And it kind of, even the what is the big conspiracy theory that Tucker Carlson, everybody in Europe, Jews will not replace us. Do you know what this is called, right? The replacement theory.
Yeah, the one where Merkel got an award for being
that's the Kollege award. But the replacement theory has been called anti-Semitic. You're horrible. This is not true. It's all conspiracy theory. Well, this paper is titled "Replacement Migration: Is It a Solution to Declining and Aging Populations?" And it's a very extensive paper from the United Nations from 2001. And I'll just give you the executive summary. I'll just read this.
Yeah.
Because they go through all of this. The new challenges being brought about by declining and aging populations will require objective, thorough, and comprehensive reassessments of many established economic, social, and political policies and programs. Such reassessments will need to incorporate a long-term perspective. Critical issues to be addressed in those reassessments would include A, the appropriate ages for retirement. Remember, this is from 2001. What have we seen in Europe? Retirement ages being moved. B, the levels, types, and nature of retirement and healthcare benefits for the elderly. France, hello? What were they complaining about? health care benefits, UK health care benefits, national health care system. C, the labor force participation, which is low right now. Labor participation is low. That's why there's low unemployment, but it doesn't mean that there's not people who are out of work. They've just given up. And right. D, the assessed amounts of contributions from workers and employers to support retirement and healthcare benefits for the increasingly elder population. Always a big discussion in our own country. And E, policies and programs relating to the international migration, in particular replacement migration and the integration of large numbers of recent migrants and their descendants. They are executing a plan globally. It's global. It's here. It's all over Europe. And they have no intention of stopping it whatsoever. This is way above Biden and above Macron. This is your great reset from the United Nations. This is why you have the UMA, the United Nations Migration Agency, who are busing people from South America, giving them cell phones down there, giving them credit debit cards. Yeah, what we see is, oh, it's the beast train. Bull crap. This is purposeful, and it goes right back to the former New York banker. America wins because our population is growing, but it's not growing because we're making children. It's growing because we have open borders.
Yep. Now, well, that brings us to Greg Abbott in Texas.
Okay. I knew this is one of those shows where we integrate. I will hit.
But he goes to New York of all places. What is Greg Abbott doing in New York?
Let's find out.
I'm here in New York City, right outside of Roosevelt Hotel. It's been the city's intake center for immigrants. And while I was standing here, a man from Senegal approached me and asked me where he needed to go. So we talked to some workers right outside of this entrance, and they pointed the man in this direction to an entrance over here. New York City continues to deal with this immigration crisis, and Governor Abbott says that's just a fraction of what Texas sees on a daily basis.
We have in any one particular location thousands of people crossing the border in a mad rush type of way.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott was in New York City on Wednesday. He spoke at the Manhattan Institute about the nation's border crisis, and he shared some surprising numbers regarding the illegal immigrants currently in New York City.
How many migrants do you have here? 120,000, something like that? Texas has bused 15,800 to New York. Where do these other people come from? The Biden administration.
Yeah, see, and Abbott's in on it. They're all in on it. He knows that this is a global movement. This is not just the Biden administration. It goes way above that. But okay, it's his job. He's playing. He's going to New York. Get on Broadway. Come on, Greg.
It's what you do.
It's what you
if
do.
If you're a Republican,
yeah,
you blame the Democrats.
Of course. It's what you do. Yeah.
Abbott explained that Texas has deployed the National Guard and the Texas Department of Public Safety to help deal with the crisis. And the National Guard has been setting up miles of razor wire along the U.S.-Mexico border.
The Biden administration had their Border Patrol go in and cut that razor wire that we put up, pull it open, and there was an onrush of thousands of illegal immigrants pouring into the country.
Abbott also said Texas is now building border barriers between Texas and New Mexico to stop illegal immigrants from crossing into El Paso.
Never forget, it was just 3 years ago, we had the lowest number of border crossings in 40 years. It's kind of hard for people to understand or remember, but it proves this, and that is the president of the United States can have an outsized impact on illegal immigration across the border.
And last week, over 8,600 people crossed the U.S.-Mexico border in a 24-hour period, according to an official from the Department of Homeland Security. That's up from about 3,500 per day after Title 42 ended in May. And Abbott said the solution is for the Biden team to just follow the laws already in place.
Not have to pass new laws, enforce the current laws on the books. Until that time comes, Texas is going to continue to use every tool that we can to secure the border the best that we can.
Yeah, it's bullcrap. They're not securing anything. They're not. They're just not. They're in Fredericksburg. It's rampant now. It's rampant. There's no stopping anybody. They're doing exactly what they're told to do. Although there's all kinds of cell phone video now of agents speaking up, speaking out against their commanding officers. It's unintelligible. It's really not usable for the show, even with the Adobe product. But they're starting to go, hey, hold on a second. You know, this is not, we're not abiding to our task, the laws, our constitutional duty.
The point that made about the laws brings up two things. I don't have any clips from the debates because it's a waste of time. But anybody who brings up the idea of immigration reform is part of the scam.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Because the fact is, what Abbott said, whether you meant to say it or not, he's right. If you enforce the laws we already have, and this applies to everything from shoplifting to immigration and everything in between, you don't have a problem.
No.
It's just law enforcement. The issue is law enforcement itself. But if you start talking about, oh, we need immigration reform, no, we don't. That's a lie. And anyone who says that, Nikki Haley being the top on that list.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so disappointed in her. She is just the worst.
She is the worst.
It's horrible. Let's go to CBS Face the Nation. Margaret Brennan talking to a Texas representative.
We turn now to Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who joins us from San Antonio this morning.
San Antonio, by the way. Riverwalk. Have you ever been to San Antonio? You ever been to the Riverwalk?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you can't go there anymore.
Why not?
It's just filled with people sleeping. Migrants. They literally dump.
So cozy next to the river and the fireflies.
Oh, yeah,
and
the lighting,
the songs and the sombreros.
No, it's not sombreros. It's not Mexicans. It's from all over the world. They're just being dumped on the buses. Boom, dump them right there, and then off you go.
This morning, Congressman, a lot to get to with you. Well, if there is a shutdown, are the Border Patrol agents in your district prepared to show up to work?
See, this isn't the next talking point. Oh, more scripts.
At a time of migrant spike and not get paid?
Spike.
You know, that's the ugly part of a shutdown is you're going to have real people get hurt. But right now, Border Patrol agents are showing up to operate in processing centers. They're not out in the field, so they're not really doing their jobs, and they haven't been doing their jobs. And many agents have told me, you know what, Tony? Right now, I mean, give you an example in El Paso, facility, 200 Border Patrol agents are in that soft-sided facility taking care of migrants, meaning they're not out in the field protecting America from bad actors. So in many cases, they might as well already be shut down.
Yes, you could hear her even going, what do you mean? That's their job. What do you mean they're not doing their job? That is their job.
Who is preventing that?
The problem is Joe Biden's failed immigration.
Oh, there it is. There we go. Failed immigration policies.
We see the images, we hear the stories, but we never hear solutions. Let's talk some solutions. One of those is I've been pushing very hard, and many of my colleagues, to end catch and release. I have an amendment in that homeland bill that ends catch and release. Another one is, once again, the Border Patrol agents, they're out of the game. The folks that are doing the real work are the sheriffs and the deputies. And there's a program called Stone Guard. And there's a $10 million upgrade for that. This helps with manpower and equipment to help fight the border crisis. But the third piece, which I'd argue is the most important, is repatriation flights. And when I met with Secretary Mayorkas earlier this week, that's what I asked him for, repatriation flights. Meaning, if somebody does not qualify for asylum, you don't bus them to New York, you don't send them to L.A., you don't let them go other places, you send them back to their country of origin.
The thing that's wrong with this guy is you don't need this. It's not an issue of law. That's the thing. It's like you're just flailing in the wind. It's a matter of, will the agencies do their job? There's nothing to do with what's in the law. This is all, and it's all just political. Oh, it's the Biden administration, of course. CNN's take.
Well, this morning there's a new agreement between Mexico and the U.S. to deport migrants at border cities back home to their countries. It's part of an effort to fight the massive surge in illegal crossings in recent weeks. Mexican officials have also agreed to prevent migrants from using railways to reach the border. Now, this agreement comes as Texas border towns are feeling the weight of the crisis, with the mayor of El Paso saying the city is at its breaking point. CNN's Rosa Flores joins us live from Houston. Rosa, I was reading your reporting throughout the course of the weekend. There's a ton to unpack here, but what's the significance of this agreement?
You know, Phil, this is really significant because it could be the difference between the U.S. seeing another surge on the southern border and not. You see, what Mexican officials here are saying is that they are going to, quote, depressurize their northern Mexican border cities by deporting migrants back to their home countries, which in essence means Mexico would be rerouting the flow of migration before migrants actually get to the U.S. southern border. U.S. Representative Henry Cuellar over the weekend applauded this move, saying that this is a strategy that has worked in the past under Presidents Obama and President Trump. But it's notable to add that advocacy organizations, immigration advocates, and human rights organizations have in the past condemned this type of strategy.
See, this is where they bring in the human trafficking, and there's all kinds of horrific stories. Oh, human trafficking, human trafficking. And of course, it's horrible. These people are being told and being given a license to travel to the United States, and they're being told, don't worry about it. When you get there, yeah, maybe you have to wait for them to cut the razor wire, but you come in, it'll be all fine. You get to stay at the Roosevelt Hotel. This is the, it is the replacement migration. It is underway. There's big money behind it. And but yeah, yes.
It has to be some, it has to, the whole thing has to be globalist, because if you remember, and we'll go back 15 years when we started doing the show, almost 16 years now.
Yeah. Wow.
There was discussions. I think it was during our show era. It may have been before, but I very distinctly remember it, about how we were lax at the Mexican border, but the Mexicans on the Guatemala border, if you tried to cross into Mexico, they'd beat you to death.
Shoot you.
They'd beat you. You couldn't get into Mexico. It was impossible because the Mexicans were so mean about anyone trying to enter their country. Now, all of a sudden, as Senegalese and Venezuelans and everyone else is plowing through Mexico like there's no barrier to Mexico at all. What North happened
Africans,
to the barrier?
North Africans. Africans.
Yeah. How does that work?
Because the United Nations Migrant Agency is shipping them. They're shipping them all over the world. They're facilitating it. And anybody who is, we're just being distracted with he said, she said, Biden, whatever. You know, stop shipping your people to New York.
Build a wall.
Well, it's a little late for that now, but it's the money. It's big money, and it is, and they're not shy about it. This white paper, which is in the show notes, have a read, and it's in multiple languages, in good UN fashion. And it's intended for the entire world to see and to act upon. And it's too late. Although Chicago is starting to wake up a little bit.
Could Chicago reverse course on its pledge to be a sanctuary city?
Some aldermen are ready to leave it up to the voters after another weekend of bus arrivals from the border.
Anthony Ponce is live with more. Anthony.
And Donna and Scott, the migrant crisis shows no signs of slowing down. As of this morning, roughly 9,000 migrants are being housed in shelters across the city, with another 2,000 camped out in places like this. We're outside of District 19. Police headquarters are also camped out at airports. And now, with no end in sight, there's a new effort underway to let voters, taxpayers themselves, decide whether Chicago should remain a sanctuary city.
Nobody has ever asked the voters, the people who actually pay taxes and vote here in the city of Chicago, if they want to remain a sanctuary city.
Ninth Ward Alderman Anthony Beal wants to change that, with migrants continuing to arrive to Chicago by the busload.
Let's let the people decide. Let's not be afraid of putting something on the ballot.
He's talking about the March primary ballot.
March primary ballot. That's after half of these people were frozen to death in the winter base camp.
Yeah, went Chicago some winter.
That'll cure people.
He wants to include the question, should Chicago keep its sanctuary city designation? The influx of migrants is expected to cost Chicago taxpayers $255 million by the end of this year.
They're always throwing out the money. Oh, it's going to cost us so much. No, it's going to cost you your job, your life, everything.
You all have to remember, only a certain fraction of the country are dealing with this. These are Democratic cities and Democratic states are the only ones that did. We are not sharing the wealth across the country. Other cities and other states are not dealing with these problems.
In order for the referendum to appear on the March ballot, it would.
Oh, no, this is the beauty of, like, hey, I think he says they're not sharing the wealth, which is even funnier. Listen again.
Cities and Democratic states are the only ones that did. We are not sharing the wealth across the country.
The wealth? Why is he saying the wealth? The wealth of illegal immigrants, asylum seekers, job seekers, the wealth? You want to share
wow,
that
that's
wealth?
That's a great catch.
That's and he also says only Democrat cities.
$1 billion by the end of this year.
You all have to remember, only a certain fraction of the country are dealing with this. These are Democratic cities and Democratic states are the only ones that deal. We are not sharing the wealth across the country. Other cities and other states are not dealing with these problems.
They need some wealth. Send them some wealth.
In order for the referendum to appear on the March ballot, it would need a majority vote from the Chicago City Council.
I definitely think that's something that should be up for discussion, regardless of whether you're pro or against it.
I don't think it's that important compared to a lot of the other issues that we are facing in Chicago.
No, really? Okay.
And right now, Chicago is under what is called a welcoming city ordinance, which means don't inquire as to any immigrants' status, and also police officers do not cooperate with ICE agents.
Now, that's interesting, because they're saying police officers are not cooperating with ICE agents, making it look like ICE is trying to do something, but the cops, man, they're in the welcoming city of Chicago. They're not helping out. Well, boots on the ground. Adam and John, thought you might find my recent experience trying to get help from ICE Homeland Security interesting. Here's some background. I've been a police officer in a small Northwest Ohio town for 25 years. We're rural and are surrounded by a lot of farmland. We see a lot of migrant workers, but recently we've seen a large uptick in illegal immigrants, so much so that I got a call from a trailer park owner. The trailer park is owned by a management company out of Florida. The Florida manager reported that they believe there may be possible human trafficking of illegal immigrants at two of their lots. So then he goes on and, you know, what he observed, you know, people being shuttled, being fed in one trailer, more people coming in, those people going, never seeing them again. And he says what is interesting is that the registered tenant for one of those trailers doesn't actually live there. That person is running a check cashing business out of another residence. So it's a whole, the scam is on all different levels.
Oh, yeah.
This type of investigation is not something we're equipped to deal with. So I called for help. I called the national hotline of ICE ERO, Enforcement and Removal Operations, and received a message that all lines were busy.
All lines are busy. Please call back later.
I tried two more times on different dates, received the same message. In addition, I also called the local office out of Detroit three times and was sent to voicemail. I have yet to receive a call back. Getting work visas for all the immigrants in New York City must be a bigger priority. So ICE is not cooperating. Don't blame the cops. Don't blame the cops. ICE is not cooperating. That's what's happening here.
The whole thing is just a complete. Well, I want to play this clip and then I have a point to make.
Okay. I do have some Europe stuff to do. So we'll make sure
I
come back.
I got the Migrants National Park and New Tang Dynasty clip. This migrants, they want to move them to the national parks now.
Yeah.
And the Biden administration's plan to house illegal immigrants on federal lands and in national parks is under scrutiny.
I got to stop this for a second. So, you know, a big story is, which I think was picked up by the Daily Wire. Some guy flew his plane over this land in Texas. And, you know, it's a development, and the development is pretty big, and they expect to have, I don't know, 20,000 people living in this development. And the story goes like this. Illegal immigrants are getting loans without checking where they are. They're putting flags of different countries. They're raising them up over all this development. It's all horrible. It's all in Texas. It's no good. And all you and all anyone has is this aerial footage of some trailers. You know, it's like. And so everyone's up in arms about this this development where this guy apparently is giving out, you know, loans that are not, you know, you get a loan without any collateral, you know, human trafficking. But there's no pictures from on the ground, even though supposedly there's flags of foreign nations being hoisted over these trailers. That's what everyone's mad about. But we have to go to New Tang Dynasty to find out that the Biden administration wants to put them in our national parks. Where's the outrage? Nowhere.
Nobody gets outraged by New Tang Dynasty.
A House committee held a hearing today examining the proposal.
The Housing Committee on Natural Resources held a hearing Wednesday on the Biden administration's use of National Park Service lands to house illegal immigrants. Earlier this month, the Biden administration agreed to lease Floyd Bennett Field to New York City.
Wow.
The site is part of the Gateway National Recreation Area and will temporarily house 2,500 of the immigrants.
The endless flow of illegal immigrants over our southern border is not only destroying individual cities and states, it's destroying our country. Now the Biden administration is looking to spread this chaos to one of America's greatest ideas, our national parks.
I didn't either. I didn't watch the debate last night either, but I'm sure that it was all about the Biden administration has the borders open, the Biden administration this, the Biden administration that. It's all theater. They don't care. They don't. They have no solutions. They know it's a plan that it's way above their pay grade.
Well, if you find a major document from 2000, everyone's seen it.
Oh, definitely.
When announcing the Biden administration's decision, New York City Mayor Eric Adams said his own administration has, quote, been forced to unsustainably open new site after new site as asylum seekers continue to arrive by the thousands. Democratic New York State Assembly member Jamie Williams, whose district includes Floyd Bennett Field, said she has grave concerns over the proposal. She emphasized that the site has no infrastructure, no plumbing, no electricity, and no sewage system.
Floyd Bennett Field, a national park, is a treasure of natural beauty and biodiversity. Housing individuals here is equivalent to tarnishing the sanctity of Yellowstone National Park. The irreversible damage of flora and fauna and the destruction of our natural beauty are contrary to the ethos of conservation and preservation that national parks symbolize.
Kenneth Spencer, chairman of the U.S. Park Police Fraternal Force of Police, expressed concerns over the agency's readiness to protect the public and the immigrants themselves.
Let me be perfectly clear. Even without the migrant shelter on Floyd Bennett Field, we are at least 300 officers short of our required minimum level. Our capacity to serve and protect the public today is literally bursting at the seams.
So this document has all these different scenarios in it with different projections, and they go all the way through 2050 in this document. And yeah, what will we need? You know, what are we going to need? What are we going to need for Europe and Italy and Europe and the European Union? It's from 2001. The European Union just started as the EU. Didn't even have the euro at that point, I don't think. Scenario? No, they had the monetary unit. I don't think the euro happened until 2003.
Let's take a look. We can check our own facts.
Yes, you check that, and I'll read this. The medium variant, so scenario one, the medium variant of projections from the United Nations World Population Prospects 1998 revision. Scenario two, the medium variant of the 1998 revision, amended by assuming zero migration after 1995. This scenario computes and assumes the migration required to maintain the size of the total population at the highest level it would reach in the absence of migration after 1995. So they have figured out exactly how much needs to go, where. And they have, by millions, Germany needs 10.2 million. The United States, 38 million. All of Europe, 18 million. European Union, 13.4 million. That's the total number. Then they have, they've plotted this whole thing out. The whole thing. Although fertility may rebound in the coming decades, few believe that fertility...
I don't see any. Evidence of that.
Now, few believe that fertility in most developed countries will recover sufficiently to reach replacement level in the foreseeable future, thus making population decline inevitable in the absence of replacement migration. It's a foregone conclusion. For France, United Kingdom, and United States, and the European Union, the numbers of migrants needed to offset population decline are less than or comparable to recent past experience. While this is also the case for Germany and the Russian Federation, the migration flows in the 1990s were relatively large due to reunification and dissolution, respectively. They have it all figured out.
Yeah, just like good socialists do.
Thank you. So Germany is also starting to, you know, like, what's going on?
Dozens of asylum hopefuls queue up outside a registration center in Berlin.
Asylum hopefuls. Now, this is Berlin. This is Berlin. Is Berlin on the border?
No, it's anywhere but the border.
I think it's on the border.
Dozens of asylum hopefuls queue up outside a registration center in Berlin. Many have made long, arduous journeys to get here. But with most asylum centers already at maximum capacity, they're facing more hurdles.
The capacities within our more than 100 buildings for refugees are coming to an end. At the moment, we have about 200 places that could be offered to asylum seekers.
So we're full. Germany's full. Berlin's full.
In Germany, asylum applications are up nearly 80% compared to 2022. 10,000 people have applied this year in Berlin alone, forcing authorities to open former airports, hardware stores, and churches.
Well, yeah. Throw them in the churches and the hardware. Hey, Ace Hardware. Ace is the place.
Ace is the friendly face.
Ace is the place with the helpful immigrant folks. Yeah, there you go.
To accommodate the growing number of requests.
Now we have the dilemma that too little capacity is available, and until the new ones are created, of course, cruel and terrible pictures arise of gyms being occupied and full accommodations. The flood of refugees will not go away because the world is not getting more peaceful.
It's a fact the German government is well aware of. On Wednesday, the Interior Ministry announced increased border policing in an attempt to discourage smugglers.
We must stop the cruel business of the traffickers because they put human lives at risk for maximum profit. That is why the federal police are now carrying out additional checks on the smuggling routes at the borders with Poland and the Czech Republic.
But as strife continues to rage in many parts of the world, more proactive policies will be needed to ensure refugees a dignified life once they inevitably do arrive.
You know what you never hear? You never hear, hey, we arrested a human trafficking ring. You don't hear that. These guys smuggle the ones going to Europe on the boats. Pick those guys up. The guy steering the boat. No, never hear that. Greece has decided they're going to tap into the undocumented migrants to curb the labor squeeze. Who knew? Who knew? There was no one left in Greece. No one in Greece can work.
And those Greeks are creative.
And you know what they're going to build? The metro and the airport. Nice. Yes, yeah. And the German interior minister, she wants voting rights for refugees. Oh, this is the next one. Yeah, they should be able to vote. Of course. Makes nothing but sense. Italy. So, yes.
I just want to tell you, the euro, January 1, 1999, very easy to remember. That's really? The first euro that came into existence.
I don't think the Netherlands switched then, though. I thought the Netherlands switched much later.
No, they didn't all switch at once, but okay, January 1st, 1999, the euro came into existence.
It was the European Monetary Unit.
No, that was years earlier. This is when an actual euro showed up.
Right, but what country did it show up in?
Well, now you're asking me more questions.
Because I remember the Netherlands. I was there at the time, and it was after 2000. I think it was after 2001. And the guilder became the euro, and everyone was like, hey, my coffee just doubled in price. How'd that happen?
Well, it really screwed. The Italians got the biggest screw job from it.
Well, speaking of the Italians, they're mad.
Notes and, okay, the currency was formerly virtual in 1999. Notes and coins began to circulate in 2002.
There you go. So they were already planning this for the European Union before the euro was in circulation. Italy is mad now because the Germans German NGOs, this is the big one, the NGOs everywhere are doing this. This is how the money flows. The human traffickers, I'm going to say they're just NGOs. That's why no one ever gets arrested. They're an NGO, man.
There's evidence for that. That this was in, if you recall, in Texas during the Trump administration, mm-hmm. they were finding these NGOs, Catholics, a lot of them.
Yes. Oh, in Austin.
Yeah, they were moving migrants all over the place.
$1 billion a year they were making.
Yeah, they were making, yes, they were making
billion,
money.
$1 billion. So Italy, you know, Lampedusa, it's full. There's more migrants now than live on the island of Lampedusa. But that's okay. We've got a plan.
Italy has set up its first center for asylum seekers deemed to have come from so-called safe countries.
Oh, they're from safe countries. Don't worry. These aren't the raping kind. Don't worry about it.
The Italian government hopes the facility in the Sicilian port of Pozzallo will accelerate the process of asylum claims. It will house people who can't claim refugee status as they've arrived from countries not considered to be dangerous. It comes as Italy struggles to cope with severe overcrowding at its migrant center on Lampedusa Island. Authorities have begun moving some to other locations after a recent surge in arrivals. The extent of the problem was highlighted earlier this month when some migrants broke out of the center because of a lack of space and essential provisions. In an effort to reduce numbers arriving, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's cabinet is implementing measures against young adults posing as unaccompanied minors in order to claim state protection.
That's okay. They're safe asylum seekers. Don't worry about it. These are the safe kind, not the kind that are raping and pillaging and blowing up cars in Sweden, not the kind that are beating up gay, lesbian, two-spirit, whatever, trans in the Netherlands. No, it's not that kind. No. It's all safe. Don't worry about it. And the only there's two. But the only country that is standing up and saying, hey, you leftists, you morons, it's all your own fault, is Poland.
Don't leave Hungary out of the picture.
I said there's two. But I don't have a clip of a Hungarian member of European Parliament. I only have a clip of the Polish member of European Parliament, Dominik Tarzyński.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dear leftists,
I love that. Hey, dear leftists. Hello, leftists. How you doing?
Thank you, Mr. President. Dear leftists, I'm very happy to take part in this debate about democracy in Europe. So let me give you some example of very major democracy in Poland, over 1,000 years of tradition of Polish nation. Polish nation rejected you, dear leftists, 8 times. 8 times in a row you have lost elections in Poland. So get used to it, because you're going to lose again. That's number one. Let me give you some data about Poland and Polish democracy. The lowest unemployment in European Union is Poland. The highest GDP after COVID in European Union is Poland. One of the lowest debts in European Union is Poland. So don't give us this rubbish about the need of educated immigration, as we heard yesterday. We don't need your doctors. We don't need your engineers. Take them all and pay for them. We don't need them. You know why? Because there is a zero terrorist attacks in Poland. Why? Because there is no illegal migration in Poland. So don't give me this look. Don't give me this arguments about the populism, because this is a fact. This is your data from Eurostat. So we don't need your engineers. We don't need your doctors. Take them. Do not teach us. Do not teach us about democracy, because we know what the democracy is. So learn from Poland. Be like Poland. Thank you very much.
Be like Poland. Exactly. We don't have any of those problems. Why? We're not letting them in, which will be a very big problem for Poland.
Well, they maintain their population. They have high fertility. They don't go lax. They don't slack off.
No.
Which brings me to the point of what are you going to do with all these people? Because obviously, I think you're right. There's nothing to stop this because it's a scam. Shanty towns, I'm telling you, people are going to have to get used to this idea. Instead of putting them up here and there, is to give them a huge area and let them. There's people coming in from all over the place that are very skilled workers in terms of carpentry.
Yeah, the
shanty towns are going to.
We don't have anymore blacksmiths, plumbers, people who have skills that we don't want anymore.
Whether we have or not is the point that I'm making is that to deal with all the, this influx is you're going to have to let them take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And shanty towns, favelas, as you would have it in Brazil,
yes.
Do work.
You know where this is going to happen first? The shanty towns? Alberta. Alberta. Listen to this.
Why Alberta?
Migrants are driving a population surge, and Alberta is the fastest growing province. 98% of Canada's population growth over the last year came from international migration. Let that sink in. I love saying that. Let that sink in.
Let that sink in. Think about it.
Soak in that for a moment, Madge. 98% of Canada's population.
I don't want to burst your bubble.
Canada's population growth came from international migration because Canadians, I mean, look, Americans are nice. We're nice guys. Canadians, you're so much nicer, and you're being taken advantage of. The surge in international migration is driving Canada's population growth rate to its heights not seen in almost 70 years. And Alberta is now growing faster than any province has seen since records began, like climate change.
This is news to me. This is a good one.
The growth rate is the highest recorded in Canada since a 12-month period in 1957 when it hit 3.3% annually during the height of the baby boom and the Hungarian refugee crisis. Close to 98% of that population growth can be attributed to net migration. The number of non-permanent residents has jumped 46%, mostly due to an increase in work and study permits. So you're letting them in.
Well, they just let them in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I mean, people either have to stand up and say no.
Yeah, which they're not doing.
No one's doing it because we're all so nice and we've been told, oh, they're human trafficking. There was some Republican lady who went down to the border. Like, oh, a horrible story about women getting raped. Yes, of course it's horrible. But that's not the problem. We need to stop it all. Stop. Everyone needs to stop it. But you can't. You can't because
it's an international movement
that's
controlled by everybody all in on it.
Banks. The former New York banker. We win and lawmakers have no incentive to stop it because they get to spend money when there's more people. They love it. They're writing laws. We're doing more laws. We got some more stuff. We have to set up camps, favelas. Where should we have the favelas in America? I mean, they work. I'm with you on that. Where do we set them up? Do we do that in the national parks?
No, you can't do that. That's the reason that national park story showed up is to and that will continue to show up as they, oh my God, they're going to wreck our parks. And, you know, we have all these tree huggers that are part of this culture that won't put up with it. So you're going to have to find... In Brazil, the irony of Brazil,
You've been there, so you can talk about it, yeah.
But the irony of Brazil, which was pointed out to me almost immediately, because the Brazilians like to point it out, is that the best views and the best property that would be worth a fortune is where the favelas are, especially in Rio. There's one hill in Rio that is all favelas. It's just a slum. It's a slum, and it is... As somebody would point out, this is where you want to see a view to knock your socks off.
Favelas.
You go live in the favelas because they gave them all the view land, the best prime property.
I have an idea. I have an idea for the United States where we can build the favelas. Aspen.
Aspen would be good.
Yeah.
It's a little cold.
They'll get used to it. After Chicago, they'll know what they're in for. It's disturbing, but everybody go to the show notes under, you'll see it, replacement migration, and get that white paper. Take a look at it, read through it. You'll see that this has been planned all the way through 2050, and they're doing it, you know, we've done the exact opposite of stimulating population growth to keep up with the aging population.
No, exactly. Sterilizing kids,
telling, you know, scaring everybody with climate change. Oh, you don't want any kids for climate change. And why? Because in the infamous words of George Carlin, they want obedient workers. That's what they want. People who will shut up and do what they're told because they're under TPS, temporary, permanent, something. They're allowed to stay for a while, but hey, stay in line, do what we tell you to do. That's what we're too mouthy. We're too complicated. We have ideas of like running for office. No, no, no. And let them vote. Let them vote. Let them vote for us who keeps them in office.
It won't change things. What's it going to change?
What? The vote? No, it'll change nothing. But it gives everyone the illusion. Oh, no, they're good citizens. And they'll be washing your car, shining your shoes, cooking your meals. And I guess we just all want it.
A lot of roofers.
Meanwhile, in America, we don't really care about that. We're obsessed about stuff like this.
Taylor Swift has entered her football era.
If we play like this every time Taylor's in the building, then she needs to be here every week.
Swift made her fearless return to Kansas City's Arrowhead Stadium, which she sold out twice last summer, to cheer on NFL tight end Travis Kelce.
I told her, I've seen you rock the stage in Arrowhead. You might have to come see me rock a stage in Arrowhead.
Wearing red, of course, next to Kelce's mom, Donna. The reaction beyond the NFL's wildest dreams.
Travis Kelce's had a lot of big catches in his career. This would be the biggest.
The women's editions of his jersey are selling fast online. The company behind Kelce's outfit capitalizing, calling it the 1989. And stores touting the New Balance shoes she wore to the game, a hot commodity. Swifties know all too well she's a mastermind of her business reputation. Her tour alone expected to add an estimated $5 billion to the global economy, more than the GDP of at least 50 countries.
Welcome to the Eras Tour!
And now her fans suddenly paying attention to the NFL, and the players are ready for it.
So troll war Plotus just rage quit out of the troll room. Adam, now you lost a listener. Bye. But that's too bad, because the reason I played this was only a setup for a classic No Agenda clip, which was sourced from Bingit.io. As we know, you specifically, identified the Taylor Swift phenomenon very early on.
No, a decade ago.
March 1st, 2009. 14 years ago. On No Agenda episode 76. Let's go back, everybody, and listen to what John discovered.
Who is Taylor Swift?
Taylor Swift?
Yeah, this is the new, you know, I don't know who's the one that picks, says, okay, we're going to make her a star. And they find some girl. This is kind of a very, very cute looking puffy faced blonde who is now she's a singer, and she's been on everything. She's on this show and that show. And then she was highlighted on Saturday Night Live, which is a rerun, but she was like first ran a couple weeks or maybe a couple months.
Country singer.
I don't know. She sings kind of that kind of middle of the road, quasi yodeling, lesbian sounding kind of tunes. But the problem is she doesn't have any range. She's got no range at all. So she's got a kind of a flat voice with a very small, really narrow range, and the material is weak. So I'm watching her, but she's pretty. And so Andrew Rummick, by the way, comes up to me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I know who she is. Yeah, Andrew Grummet.
Andrew Grummet says, oh, you know, my wife and my daughter are really into this girl named Taylor Swift. And I don't know what he was going to tell me, because then I went off on him. Something about Taylor Swift, I guess. But I just, it's just like overnight, this just happens. I've never seen anything like it. Does she have a background? Has she paid her dues? Has she been around forever singing the blues in Memphis? I mean, what, you know, the next thing you know, she's there and she stinks. Okay, I should add to that, because I remember this whole thing.
Yeah.
Her dad was a superstar
lawyer.
Merrill Lynch, he was investment banker.
All right, banker, that's what he was, investment banker.
And he moved the family to Memphis.
Yes.
Where he picked up a bunch of clients that were, you know, looking to do something with a lot of their money, and he had this daughter named Taylor, and he's going to push her into the scene, and he did. And she, being in a family of smart money, it was a genius at marketing herself. And this whole thing with Travis Kelce, I listened to sports talk. Mm-hmm. These people actually think this is a boyfriend girlfriend thing. They are so stupid. This is such a setup for publicity. And the giveaway to me was after that game that she attended, they walked together to some limos. And as a new boyfriend girlfriend, two things very observable: not holding hands. And the second one, even if you don't hold hands with a promotional woman like her, who's a genius at this, she would have at least locked arms and gone arm in arm to the limos, because that's what you would do if you're a boyfriend girlfriend. That's what you would do in the early stages. You're going to lock arms or hold hands or even, you know, put arm around a shoulder or something. No, none of that. It was two business people walking down together thinking about how much money they're going to make.
And here's the business end of it.
Travis, did you know you can get this season's COVID-19 shot when you get your flu shot?
Oh, two things at once, please. Now back to two things at once. Two things at once.
That's not two things at once.
Mom!
Travis, ask about getting this season's COVID-19 shot when getting your flu shot.
There it is. It's all transactional. You know, I think the Kardashians actually saw what Taylor Swift and her family did, and the machine, because she has writers. She doesn't just, yodel herself. She has writers who are very skilled, and the whole industry. Look, if you have a decent song, you repeat it in the algo on Spotify 5 times, everybody, it's a hit. That's how it works. It's very simple. It's all transactional. The Kardashians went, it's too bad my girl, what's her name? The momager. She says, too bad my girls have no talent.
we'll just
put them on top of some basketball players. That's what she did. So now it's come full circle. Yeah, it works.
Get a shot.
Yeah.
Get boosted.
Yeah, we see more boosters. What?
That's right. Time for your COVID booster. CNN leading the pack.
New federal data is revealing a disturbing trend in the recent increase in COVID-19 cases. Hospitalizations are rising faster than average among children. CNN medical correspondent Meg Terrell is here with the details.
Are these hospitalizations in vaccinated and unvaccinated children? Do we know?
Well, the vaccination rates among kids are extremely low, particularly for kids under 5. Only 13% of those kids have actually gotten any dose of COVID vaccine. So there's just not a lot of immunity out there.
This doesn't ring true at all. She's not answering the question. She'll come around to it at the end. But the question is, are these kids vaccinated or not? Well, it's very low and this and, bad parents.
Both from vaccination or from prior infection in that age group. For teenagers, it's higher. And so you would expect, we haven't seen the specific data breaking it out, but that most of the hospitalizations are in unvaccinated kids.
Okay. Do we have a sense, you talk about the vaccinations, how the administration has handled kind of this latest, spike. What's the terminology I should even use here, but how the administration is operating in this moment?
Yeah, we are starting to hear that the White House, of course, is watching this. And today, actually, they've relaunched the home COVID test program, so you can order 4 free tests per household at covidtests.gov. And experts say this is really important, not just so that you can prevent spread of COVID if you think you might have it yourself to people who might be vulnerable, but also because if you're in a high-risk group, treatment is actually available if you test positive for COVID, and knowing sooner rather than later helps you actually get those.
Paxlovid, for example, you have to take pretty soon, right?
Yeah, within 5 days.
Oh, within 5 days. Okay. So there's a study that came out from Martin Luther University, Halle Wittenberg. This is a very well-known university, 500-year-old research university in Germany, found that people with the highest risk of long COVID or post-COVID condition were unvaccinated people infected with the Wuhan variant. They also, just as a sideline, tested to see if vaccinated people were better protected against long COVID. And results say, no, there's absolutely zero chance that you will have less chance that you will have long COVID whatever that is, we still don't really know what it is, if you're vaccinated. So it's the whole, this is, remember the CDC director, our new one, Mandy Cohen, said this.
So what the vaccine can do is protect you from the worst of what COVID is. But remember, the vaccine, early data is showing us it can also prevent you from getting long COVID. It decreases your risk of getting long COVID, which is extended symptoms from that COVID virus. So yes, protecting from the worst, but also protecting you from potential long-term symptoms from this virus, even if you have a mild case.
Okay, so that it does not protect you from long COVID. That is the peer-reviewed research.
So she's a liar.
She's poorly informed, which is bad for the CDC director, or she's a liar. But don't worry, NBC to the rescue.
Back now with rising concerns about COVID as we move into the fall. Hospitalizations are up nearly 8%. And beginning today, free tests are once again available at covidtests.gov. And for those suffering from long COVID, a study just out is giving new clues to identifying and possibly treating the mystery condition. Here's Ann Thompson.
Cello is Joshua Roman's pleasure and profession. But long COVID's made it tough for the virtuoso soloist to play lengthy pieces.
What kind of difference has long COVID made in your career?
Hey, go out and get me a human interest story on long COVID. Let's do something about long COVID. Make it something everyone can feel, you know, kind of really bad. I mean, this is a virtuoso.
Long COVID has forced me to only do the most important things.
Long COVID impacts 6% of adults, according to the CDC. Symptoms include fatigue, brain fog, and memory difficulties. Now a new study offers clues about potential blood biomarkers.
We're seeing patterns.
David Petrino is the lead researcher.
Our study showed that individuals with long COVID had significant and measurable differences in their blood.
And what were those differences?
These differences were a mixture of hormone dysfunction, immune dysfunction, and reactivation of past viruses.
Specifically, 50% lower levels of cortisol, the hormone that makes you feel alert and awake, T-cell exhaustion in immune systems, and dormant viruses like Epstein-Barr and herpes reemerging.
This isn't a simple illness. This is a complex illness.
The study examined the blood of 268 people, some who recovered from COVID, some never infected, some with long COVID like Roman, who wants to not need reminders like this and have total recall of the music he loves.
All right. So and I'm going to set you up here, John, because this is one of those instances where we both clipped the same astounding discovery. Of course, none of this could be from the vaccination itself. None of it whatsoever, because are you crazy? The vaccine protects you from the worst of COVID. Now, the reason I'm going to set you up is I actually clipped a lot more shorter bits than you did. You clipped three or four pieces. You have it titled as COVID virologist, which is incorrect. So I'm going to set you up with my intro clip of Professor, his name is Professor Buchholz. He is from University of South Carolina. And he is not a virologist. He's going to explain what he is in this. And having watched this video,
it's just the name of the clip.
I know. I played your thank you 1 hour photo. Okay.
No cleaners.
1 hour cleaners. I like this guy a lot because he has this air of I know exactly what I'm talking about. But the system is so lame and screwed up that I'm just going to tell you guys and do with it what you want. And I like his demeanor. I'll play the intro clip and then you can play your clips.
My name is Philip Buchholz. I have a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology. I'm a cancer gene jock. Basically, I do cancer genomics research at the University of South Carolina. And what that means is that I'm kind of an expert on all the ways that the human genome can get futzed with during your lifetime and which of those things cause cancer and which ones don't.
Okay, I'll stop it there. And if I feel there's anything missing from your clips, we can play it later.
Well, basically, the guy did a little research just on a screwball notion, and I think it's explained pretty well in clip number one.
In my professional evaluation of the literature, the Pfizer vaccine did a pretty good job of keeping people out of the cemetery, but it sucked at stopping the pandemic. And It was the best of sucky options that we had.
The guy reminded me a little bit of a young Meatloaf, by the way. Did you catch any of that? Did you get that vibe from him?
No, none at all.
Okay.
And I still believe that it was deployed mostly in good faith, but there were a lot of shortcuts taken because the house was on fire, and we could do a better job next time from the lessons that we're going to learn here. That's my own personal view of this, but I'm also, my philosophical bent here is, I'm sure many of you have heard of Occam's razor, right? Choose the simplest of explanations. Well, there's another one called Hanlon's razor, which is never attribute malice to that which can be better explained by incompetence. And so I'm trying to be gracious here in many circumstances. There could be malice underneath, but I'm trying to see just incompetence to be gracious. So the Pfizer vaccine is contaminated with plasmid DNA. It's not just mRNA. It's got bits of DNA in it. This DNA is the DNA vector that was used as the template for the in vitro transcription reaction when they made the mRNA. I know this is true because I sequenced it in my own lab. The vials of Pfizer vaccine that were given out here in Columbia, one of my colleagues was in charge of that vaccination program in the College of Pharmacy, and for reasons that I still don't understand, he kept every single vial. So he had a whole freezer full of the empty vials. Well, the empty vials have a little tiny bit in the bottom of them. He gave them all to me, and I looked at them. We had two batches that were given out here in Columbia, and I checked these two batches, and I checked them by sequencing. And I sequenced all the DNA that was in the vaccine, and I can see what's in there. And it's surprising that there's any DNA in there. And you can kind of work out what it is and how it got there. And I'm kind of alarmed about the possible consequences of this.
No, I don't know what your other clips are, so I'll just let you continue.
So I would mention, if you remember our show during the swine flu era, one of the swine flu manufacturing companies actually had live swine flu viruses in the vaccine. They were so careless with their manufacturing. You remember this?
I sure do.
And it went out, and all kinds of people ended up with swine flu because of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And it was like, the problem is, and I think it's kind of elucidated in this guy's presentation, even though he never says this, the fact that they're held harmless because they've been giving the green light. Whatever you put in there, whatever you shoot into people, you're not liable. Don't worry about it. This is the problem. And that's why what he claims is this careless amount of DNA, which is the part of the system that made the RNA, is still there. Because what's the point? We can't get sued. We just slop this stuff out. Who cares? Just crank it out. And if it does damage, too bad. Here we go. Part two.
Both in terms of human health and biology, but you should be alarmed about the regulatory process that allowed it to get there. So this DNA, in my view, it could be causing some of the rare but serious side effects like death from cardiac arrest. There's a lot of cases now of people having suspicious death after vaccine. It's hard to prove what caused it. It's just, you know, temporally associated. And this DNA is a plausible mechanism. This DNA can and likely will integrate into the genomic DNA of cells that got transfected with the vaccine mix. This is just the way it works. We do this in the lab all the time. We take pieces of DNA, we mix them up with a lipid complex like the Pfizer vaccine is in. We pour it onto cells, and a lot of it gets into the cells, and a lot of it gets into the DNA of those cells, and it becomes a permanent fixture of the cell. It's not just a temporary thing. It is in that cell and all of its progeny from now on forevermore. Amen. So that's why I'm kind of alarmed about this DNA being in the vaccine. It's different from RNA because it can be permanent. This is a real hazard for genome modification of long-lived somatic cells, like stem cells. And it could cause, theoretically, this is all a theoretical concern, but it's pretty reasonable based on solid molecular biology, that it could cause a sustained autoimmune attack toward that tissue. It's also a very real theoretical risk of future cancer in some people, depending on where in the genome this foreign piece of DNA lands, it can interrupt a tumor suppressor or activate an oncogene. I think it'll be rare, but I think the risk is not zero, and it may be high enough that we ought to figure out if this is happening or not.
Yeah, the idea being, if you're getting foreign DNA mixed into your body, it's with you forever, including your kids and your grandkids, and could be going on for generations.
So this is a this, because he's speaking to, I think, the state legislature. Yes. And they're like, well, we can't, what are we supposed to do about it? I there's other stuff, there's more detail that he goes into, but I just wanted to wrap it with the third clip, which is his kind of a summary of what we have to do. And the main thing is the obvious, which is clean these vaccines up. And he then talks about how he thinks this platform is great, which makes me think he's pretty objective about this.
Get the DNA out of the booster and all future versions of this vaccine. I'm a real fan of this platform, okay? I think it has the potential to treat cancers. I really believe that this platform is revolutionary, and in your lifetime, there will be mRNA vaccines against antigens in your unique cancer. Okay. But they got to get this problem fixed. Okay. And I, right now, I think the financial incentives are too great to just keep on rolling with it.
Yeah. I wanted to add two things to this because he went into a lot of different things. The first one is when this first came out, we were told over and over and over again, no, you conspiracy theorists, no, there's no, it's not DNA, it's mRNA, it's not DNA, it's mRNA.
A little nerdy science here. The central dogma of molecular biology is that DNA gets transcribed into RNA, okay? And then RNA gets translated into protein. This is just how life runs. Why does this matter? Well, DNA, for the purposes of this discussion, DNA is a long-lived information storage device. Okay, what you were born with, you're going to die with and pass on to your kids. DNA lasts for hundreds of thousands of years, and it can last for generations if you pass it on to your kids. Right? So alterations to the DNA, they stick around. RNA, by its nature, is temporary. It doesn't last. And that feature of RNA was part of the sales pitch for the vaccine.
There it is. It was part of the sales pitch. It wasn't DNA, it was mRNA.
Yeah, but they were right. The mRNA is what it's supposed to be in that, yes, shot. The DNA in there is just because it's careless, sloppy.
Well, not entirely. It's a little different. And this is, I think, the killer clip.
The way you do RNA transcription, in vitro transcription reactions, you have to give it a DNA template, okay? And you can give it a DNA template that is just a synthetic piece of DNA that is only the instructions to make the RNA. And that's what was done for getting the emergency use authorization and the clinical trial. It's called Process One, if you look up that kind of stuff. They made a PCR product of just the bits that they wanted, and then they did the in vitro transcription, made a bunch of RNA of that. There was no plasmid DNA to contaminate the stuff that was used for the trial. But that making that PCR product doesn't scale the way that was necessary to vaccinate the whole world. So a cheaper way to scale up the production of this template is to clone that PCR product into this plasmid vector, put the plasmid vector into bacteria, and then you can grow up big vats of the bacteria. They make a lot of the plasmid DNA for you. Then you use that plasmid DNA as the template to drive this transcription reaction to make your RNA. And that's where how the contamination ended up in the production batches, even though it was not in the stuff that was used for the authorization trials.
That's the thing.
Yeah, but again, it was contamination.
Yeah, no, of course it was. But the reason why is the vaccine might have been safer or completely safe for the emergency use authorization. But then when they went into production, they did it a different way. And that code goes back to what you just said.
The old lab versus field stuff, you know?
And, you know, don't worry about it.
I don't understand why it blew up out here.
Don't worry about it. It's all good. Not a problem. And I'm not going to play a clip, but the only other thing was interesting that he said is that he tested multiple batches of Pfizer And he says Moderna had much less DNA. And what they had done is they tried to get rid of the DNA by slicing it, and just left a lot of bits in there. But by his own testimony, it doesn't matter how much is in there. As long as it's in there, it through the lipid nanoparticles, it will fuse with your own DNA, even if it's just a little bit. He talked about buckshot. Doesn't really matter. But he said some doses had much lower DNA amounts in it, so technically less chance that you'd get it, and some had much more, very high. And that might explain the stories we've seen about certain people who got certain batches having more adverse events. That was my takeaway from what he was saying. So this, to me, this is a very big deal.
Yeah, I thought so.
And they and heads should roll.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen. Oh no!
Since we're on the topic, since nothing's going to happen, you might as well play Fauci in the CIA, because going to happen about this either.
Nothing's going to happen.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is now accused of secretly visiting the CIA's headquarters during the pandemic, where he allegedly tried to influence the agency's official findings in their investigation into the origins of the pandemic. That's according to U.S. Representative from Ohio, Brad Wenstrup, the chairman of the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, who described the concerning information in a letter he sent to the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services. Earlier, I spoke with physician and former U.S. Ambassador Dr. Jeff Gunter. He's also currently running for the U.S. Senate in Nevada. Dr. Gunter, great to have you on our show. Thanks so much for coming on. As a doctor and an experienced diplomat, how do you view the allegations that Dr. Anthony Fauci attempted to influence the CIA's investigation into the origins of COVID-19?
I'd give a solution or an answer just like Yogi Berra did, the famous baseball coach. It's deja vu all over again. None of this is particularly surprising to me. During my medical school years, I was cutting my teeth during HIV from 83 to 87. I remember Dr. Fauci then. When I was heading up the U.S. Embassy, thanks to our great president, Donald Trump, I let the team know that I believed that this virus came from a bat to a bottle and somehow got out of the lab back then. Then when I read the emails of various scientists going and talking to Fauci before he published that article of the proximal origins of COVID in Nature, one of the premier journals, which clearly now was a misdirection of the American public, it's not surprising. It's Fauci deja vu all over again. It's sad. It's disheartening. The American public deserve and need to know the truth about the worst pandemic the world has ever seen.
It's like, and nothing will happen. Yes. Yeah. And nothing will happen. Yeah. It's just another story to be subjugated or
it's another story for the show.
Diverted by Taylor Swift news.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a second clip. Could it get any worse?
Play that.
In your view, are there any indications of political or national security motives behind the alleged suppression of the lab leak theory by public health authorities?
It's a fantastic question. We all know that when you mix medicine with politics, what do you get? You get politics. It was so obvious when it happened, when COVID came out to me, that it was a lab leak. And it turns out that it was being funded by Fauci. So absolutely, absolutely, they're trying to craft the narrative. More people died with COVID with Joe Biden than they did with President Trump.
I love the died with COVID. Doesn't mean you died of COVID, but you had COVID.
The jury's still out on the effectiveness of vaccines. They say that it limits hospitalizations and severe illness. There's no evidence to show that it makes you less infectious to the other people. I just checked the CDC hospitalizations for COVID right now in Nevada. They're not significantly high. Deaths are down. So what does that tell you? It tells you that there's an election coming up. It tells you that when you mix politics with medicine, especially with this administration, you get politics.
All right. I'll try and top it before we take a break.
Well, I have two more clips.
Oh, about this? About COVID?
I have three more COVID clips, actually. I loaded up on COVID today.
You're seething with COVID.
But these are historical clips.
Okay.
These are from 2021.
Ah, we love that.
When the Delta was just coming out and they were arguing about what to do about the shot and Delta and...
Yeah, the Delta variant. Yes, the Delta variant.
And the Delta variant. And it was, they were besides themselves in all kinds of different ways. They were tying themselves into knots over the Delta because it was creating something. If you remember this word, this is a term that we forgot. Breakthrough.
Oh, breakthrough infection. Yes, yes. It broke through the vaccination.
You got a vaccine, you got your booster, you got your second shot, you got your booster, and then you got COVID, which everybody seems to have got done. And that, at the time, the first time these started to show up, these were called breakthroughs.
Yes.
And it was disconcerting. Oh, my God, another breakthrough. And then eventually they stopped using the word because it was meaningless because everybody got the shot, they got COVID. So let's play a couple of these historic clips from 2021.
Part of the allure of the modified mRNA technology behind Moderna and Pfizer's COVID vaccines is how easy it is to update. All you have to do is reprogram a string of genetic code and voila.
Voila! Update! Just like Windows 11!
Could make a new vaccine tailored to fight dangerous new strains of the virus. But the booster shots that the White House wants to roll out next month likely will not be re-engineered against the ultra-contagious Delta variant.
Ultra-contagious.
WBUR's Angus Chen joined Bob Oakes to talk about why, and he started by explaining how the technology works.
The mRNA-based vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, and also the Johnson & Johnson DNA-based vaccine, all contain a string of genetic code based on the original coronavirus's spike protein. Our cells use that code to make this spike protein, and then they build immune molecules that can neutralize it. The thing is, this string of code is easily reprogrammed. So vaccine makers can rewrite it and make it based on the Delta genetics or any other variant you might want to counter. It's also not a big deal from the manufacturing side because you don't really have to change what you're doing to make that updated vaccine.
So if it's that straightforward, Angus, how come the booster shots are unlikely to be updated?
Well, I spoke with Harvard immunologist Dr. Dan Baruch about this, and he said updating the vaccine should theoretically provide better protection against Delta. But in reality, it probably wouldn't make a big difference. And that's because Delta isn't that different from the ancestral coronavirus in its physical shape and form. So the antibodies from the original vaccine should still work against it. Dr. Baruch thinks there's another reason why Delta is causing cases among vaccinated people.
Wow. It's good you're doing this because it's good to remember how they've been lying for years, years on end and coming out.
Fooling themselves.
No, I think, you know, throw in some Taylor Swift news. People forget. And they want to forget. We've been so traumatized by this. I think people are twitching just listening to these clips.
And I'll go back to, I don't think they're lying. I think they're dead sincere and stupid.
Well, yes, dummies abound.
Dr. Baruch dummies.
Continue part two.
These are long clips. That's a long one.
Dr. Baruch thinks there's another reason why Delta is causing cases among vaccinated people.
The increased breakthroughs with the Delta variant is probably more related to its hyperinfectiousness rather than its intrinsic ability to evade antibodies.
Ah, the breakthrough.
Basically, when you're infected with the Delta variant, you end up breathing out a lot more virus than you would if you had the old coronavirus. It's a lot more transmissible.
Didn't the mask stop that?
Transmissible as well.
No, I guess
so
not.
People are both more likely to be exposed to it and be exposed to more of it.
Now you're talking.
If there's even a small benefit from using an updated vaccine as a booster, then why shouldn't it be developed and why shouldn't we take it?
Part of the issue is right now there are millions of vaccine doses in storage across the United States.
Yeah, there you go.
And they are effective against the Delta variant.
While stocks last.
Especially when it comes to preventing severe illness or death.
Inventory
updating the vaccine
turn.
Now might draw public faith in those doses, which concerns Dr. Benjamin Linus. He's an epidemiologist at Boston University.
Wait, stop a second. You got to hit what he just said was, well, there was a lot of inventory left. And then if we don't give that as the cure for Delta 2, it will make people lose confidence in that early shot.
Yeah.
Because because it's not good enough.
Yeah, then we won't move the inventory. Our shoes need to go. We won't move
the inventory, and people are going to lose confidence, and that's going to make it even slower to get their first shot. And
yeah.
It's like they're running a game on the public.
You don't want to sell the new Yeezys until the old ones are off the shelf.
Yeah, you got to get this the marketing 101.
I don't know what message it would give if they said, oh, we have a new highly, specially engineered vaccine for Delta. Does that generate concern that the original vaccine didn't work against Delta, which is absolutely not true?
And I want to remind people, I think we were pretty much doing this deconstruction when it was taking place. That's why we still get notes from people saying, man, I'm glad I was listening to you guys. Because we were breaking this marketing story down continuously.
Yeah, these are our old clips.
Linus and other health experts I spoke with said the goal right now is really to vaccinate as many people as we can in the United States and in the rest of the world. Using a vaccine that still works is a better way to do that than waiting for an incremental gain in efficacy that we might get from an updated vaccine.
But Angus, don't you think that any COVID booster shot, updated or not, is going to be greeted with skepticism from some members of the public reluctant to take it?
Perhaps those pesky podcasters might be all over this marketing scam?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, vaccine skepticism has been something that is
has been going on in
the United States for quite some time.
Oh, yeah, podcasters.
I don't think a booster shot is going to change that or do anything to really fix that. I think what a booster shot does do is it helps people who might really need that extra protection to stay safe against the Delta variant. I think what's a more important question when it comes to booster shots is whether or not these shots would be better put to use by sending them, around the world or around the country to people who are unvaccinated and want to be vaccinated, but haven't had the access or the ability to do that yet. And I think that's something that public health experts and officials are going to continue to grapple with and think about for some time.
That's WBUR's Angus Chen speaking with Bob Oakes.
Boost! All right. Are you done?
I'm going to be done. Yeah, I have one more thing that is similar, but it's about the ivermectin bull crap, and I'm going to save that for another show.
Good. Before we take this break, I think I figured out the F-35 ejection op. I'm calling it an op now.
Could be.
So what we know is the pilot was very experienced. He was one of the top pilots. I know this.
If you're going to do an op, you want your top men.
Of course you do.
You don't want some slouch that's going to screw it up.
Right. So he ejects. The plane continues to fly until it crashes. We heard all the things. I was on autopilot and we had that cool guy. I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure that the witness, the eyewitness who saw it, this guy.
That guy.
What in the world is this? That he may not have been paid for it, but he was in on it. He maybe not knowingly.
The shill.
He was the shill. So the thing that bothered me the most on the last episode was the 911 call. It's like, why are you not calling HQ? Now, some of the jet jocks who I talked to said, well, he was kind of the top guy, so maybe he would have had to call himself. I'm not quite buying that. But we did get confirmation from a 911 call taker dispatcher, says, having listened to the reported 911 call from the F-35 pilot who ejected, I believe it to be a legitimate recording of the incident. And I put this anonymous 911 dispatcher's...
read that. Yeah, and it's okay. Was legit. So
Sounds legit. But this reminded another one of our jet jocks of a scene from Top Gun 2. And the scene in Top Gun 2 is Tom Cruise has now ejected from this experimental aircraft. Sound familiar? And he doesn't call 911, but to make it a little funnier, he walks into this hick diner. Here he is. He's walking in. The bell is ringing. He points and he's looking all haggard and all blowed up. And he's asking for a glass of water. And, you know, it's just a diner. All the people are looking at him like, where did this guy come from in his spacesuit? He's drinking his water.
Thank you. Where am I?
And the little kid says, you're on Earth, thinking he's a spaceman. So that would be the equivalent of the 911 call. Totally unbelievable that you walk into a diner and with your spacesuit on and you're all dirty from ejection and, you know, from explosion. And you say, give me some water. And where am I? Earth. The next scene, the very next scene, he is in with, I think it was played by, what's his name? Ed, whatever. He's the commander, and he's berating Tom Cruise. He's saying, what is going on with you? You have all these commendations. You should have been a senator or an admiral by now. Why are you still doing this? Why are you a captain?
You should be at least a two-star admiral by now, if not a senator. Yet here you are. Captain. Why is that?
It's one of life's mysteries, sir.
This isn't a joke. I asked you a question.
I'm where I belong, sir.
Well, the Navy doesn't see it that way. Not anymore. These planes you've been testing, Captain, one day, sooner than later, they won't need pilots at all. Pilots that need to sleep, eat, take a piss. Pilots that disobey orders. All you did was buy some time for those men out there. The future is coming, and you're not in it.
I believe this to be a script to let people know that the biggest problem, the plane wasn't the problem. It was the loser pilot. And the military industrial complex is going to come out with something sooner or later to let us know that, you know, we really don't need pilots anymore. We have the new F-35. Oh, no, it doesn't need a pilot. I think this was life imitates art.
It's an interesting theory. You've been bitching and moaning for probably 10 years about the
pilotless airplane.
Pilotless plane, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, if the F-35 pilot can't even keep it going, I mean, we shouldn't have those guys. We shouldn't have, you are not in the future of aviation, son. I don't know. I ran it by the F guys, and they all like, you know, they've been trying to get to this for a long time.
Yeah, well, it is a goal.
So we'll see. There's no
I remember the one time I was at, I think it was Nellis in Vegas. I was getting a tour, and they were proud of, they had these drones there that you just on display, and they went on and on about how great this the drones were because, I took the red flag course, whatever it was called. I got to sit in. And the drones are better because there's no, you're not going to kill these, you know, these pilots. You put a lot of money into one of these guys and he gets killed. That's money down the drain.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's annoying.
It's very annoying.
The pilot's not too happy.
Hey, with that, I want to thank you for your courtesy in the morning to you, the man who put the C's in Fauci and the CIA. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only, inimitable Mr. John C. DeVore.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, our ships, the sea, boots to the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
And in the morning to the trolls in the troll room, Sir Bemro, stop doing that. People are trying to count the trolls before it's time to count the trolls. I already counted the trolls. We had 1925 before we would have taken our break. Don't do that. Let me count them now.
There it is.
So we have, what is the count at this moment is 1862, but it was 1925 10 minutes ago.
Bemro. Well, 1862 is the average for Thursday.
I know, but it was above. It was above that average, but
it probably is always above it.
But, you know, Bemro has to sit there and like, oh, I can count the trolls. I've got the power. And he ruins the whole count. It's like telling the punchline.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Heisenberg principle.
Okay, now he's repenting. I'm sorry, I scared a bunch of them off. Yeah, you did. Hey, Hey, those trolls are in the troll room, trollroom.io. This is where you can listen to the show live on Thursdays and Sundays. But it's 24 hours a day, and there's always a good podcast on noagendastream.com. It's all talk, no commercials. Actually, it's not all talk because we have Darren O, who does the rock and roll pre-show before every No Agenda for 2 hours. It's where everybody hangs out. I mean, you go to the troll room, there's always people sitting around hanging out. Sometimes they're listening to the show. Sometimes they're not. But during this show, they are, and they're trolling around, doing all kinds of trolly stuff. Some of them even rage quitting. Yeah, that's what trolls do. Now, you could also follow
us. Oh, because of the Taylor Swift.
Yeah. You just lost a listener, man. So let's make sure War Plotus never shows up.
I was actually surprised we did the story. I mean, I was prepared for it because of that, my mention of them not walking out holding hands.
It was a genius segue. I took us from a classic clip right into COVID. Come on. It was programming.
You'd love to be complimented.
No, I don't. I'm complimenting myself. I don't need any help from you. But
that's true. You don't need any help. You don't need to be complimented.
But if you feel like it, I mean, do whatever you want. It's all good by me. You can also follow us on our Mastodon instance, which is quite private since we've been blocked by everybody else in the Fediverse.
Everybody, every other Mastodon instance thinks we suck.
Do whatever you want.
We're bad.
It's all good. You can follow John C. Dvorak at noagendasocial.com, Adam at noagendasocial.com. We're always there kind of hanging out, seeing what's going on and posting stuff and getting stories. Sometimes you guys have good stories. And the memes are down. That's good. No more memes. I'm happy about that.
I'm not happy.
This is a value for value podcast. We came up with a name. We invented the concept. We discovered quite by accident almost 16 years ago that asking people to subscribe for premium content or just some low number, which does not represent the amount of work that goes into it, the value. It's only going to be a few people anyway. It's only 3-4%. So you might as well say, hey, what is it worth to you? And we were surprised when we saw, I think certainly during COVID, when people are like, well, you know, my life was worth quite a lot. Thanks. I appreciate that. I'm going to give you more than $5. And that's how we've been running it. And we'll be celebrating 16 years coming up in October. Around October, I think the end of October, the 20th or something.
Yeah, at the very beginning, we were suckered by the notion that it didn't last long, which was the idea that, well, if you're going to, you know, I think we had, I don't know how many thousand people, probably 50 maybe at the most.
Yeah.
But if you had 50,000 people, and they all gave $2.
Yeah, we were driving Lambos in
that's
our mind. $100,000
a month.
In our mind, we had Lambos.
That's a lot of money if you can, you know, and $2 is cheap. So the 50,000 people would say, oh, it's only $2. So I'm going to, as if 50,000 people are going to pay $2, $10, no bucks. They'll do that.
No bucks.
No, it's not even close to possible. And then we started noticing that people were giving their favorite numbers. They were just making up numbers.
Yes, numerology.
With some stories involved. Oh, this number, you know, this and that means this to that to my wife or whatever. And we realized that open-ended is the way to do it.
Yeah.
And forget these little, you know, the idea that everyone's going to chip in because they don't.
No.
Never will.
You know, what's interesting. I, of course, follow the slow collapse of the podcast industrial complex.
Your favorite thing to do.
Yes. And so Podimo is this Swedish company, and they raise a lot of venture capital, like 160 million euros. And they've gone all around Europe and they're buying up all the podcasts and putting them behind a paywall. And so now there's a problem. And the problem,
I can see the problem already.
Well, problem one is, so they had to convert a number of people from the free podcast, unless it's not free, but open and available with ads or whatever they were doing, or no, I don't know what they were doing. To pay money. So I think that they literally are doing €5 a month for their entire offering. But now they can't get any new people in because they have no product that is open.
It's not discoverable.
Exactly.
Discoverability is the top thing you need, especially in new media.
Exactly. And so they have to do like in-person appearances and set up a tent and do the show from a market square. And then to get people interested in the show, you can't get. And of course, they only got maybe 5% of the people went from, you know, hey, this is a cool product. I listened to an ad, or I don't think anyone was doing value for value, to €5 a month, which, by the way, is the first thing to go when things get tight. You know, with us, it's like people come and go. Like, I'm in it, and then I don't listen for a while. Man overboard, and then, oh, man, I really feel nervous. I feel jittery. I got to listen to No Agenda and get a fix. And then people come back, you know. Give back the value when you feel like it, when you're ready for it. However,
we have a lot of people that haven't come back, from what I can tell.
No, they come back. A lot of people come back. They do.
Where's our anonymous lesbian?
Well, that was your handler. I don't. She was your contact.
She moved to New York.
Now there's your answer, isn't it?
That is the answer. Surrounded by the milieu.
Yeah.
Milieu is more powerful than the show.
So we only ask for value to be returned whenever you feel that you've received enough value, and how you do it is up to you. We do have three categories: time, talent, and treasure. And we have a lot of people putting in a lot of time, you know, writing us reports and corresponding with us, going out, hitting people in the mouth, organizing meetups. There's lots of things you can do with your time. Talent is fantastic when you see what the artists are doing, especially since I was moaning about the use of AI. Oh, the artists have finally come back and started to do stuff by hand and, you know, with their tools, not relying on the crutch of a copying machine to do stuff that makes it all look very pretty, but makes everything subsequently boringly pretty. You know, like drones, like non-playing characters in a row. And Paul Couture, artist number one on the No Agenda Art Generator. He nailed it. He had such a great piece. Now, we did have some discussion about things. We looked at a number of pieces. But this caution, this episode may cause sudden death. I think it was good. It warned people, because, man, I got a lot of people who said, hey, man, I'm not dead, but it really freaked my dog out. Or, hey, man, I have a headache now because of that tone that you played.
Yeah,
apparently,
no one died.
No one died.
And no one got a headache from it.
No, one said he got a headache.
He said
he got a headache. And it was a cool looking piece. You know, high frequencies. It had the little antenna there. Yeah, it was a fun little warning sticker.
Yeah, and it was different. It was totally alien to what we've normally been doing.
Yeah,
which is what we want, some variety. And this is extreme variety. It's a sign, the kind of sign that you go to a sign maker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that do highway signs.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then, which is very different.
Now, you like the Melon Girl, which I'm sure you used in the newsletter. You used the Melon, yeah. The Melon Girl, which I understand why you like that piece.
Yeah. It's a good piece. It's a good piece. Girl holding a melon.
Yes. Well, we know.
What more did you want from a piece?
This is
with 8008 on the melon.
We looked at the human mulch from Dan Kennedy.
Yeah, that was not going to happen.
Yeah, but you know what? It wasn't an AI piece. That's what I like. It's like, oh, thanks. You did some work. It just wasn't what we wanted. It didn't quite work. Dame Candy Band also did the Chicago tent. I think the clown part is what didn't make that one work. Because, you know,
let me see which one.
You remember, because this was based on the base camp tents in Chicago with the asylum seekers. And she made a circus tent.
I see this. It says
tent.
Chicago on it?
Yeah, it does say Chicago on it.
Tent City?
Doesn't say.
And you said, what doesn't work? The clown. There's no clown.
Well,
there.
No, it was a circus tent, like Clown World type deal. To me, it was confusing. It didn't quite show.
Oh, no, it didn't work at all.
No. Okay, thanks. That's what I'm trying to say. It didn't work.
We have a new guy that obviously showed up. Pet Rocks or Pet Rex, who did put our pictures on. They say, that's an automatic no, so forget it.
Yeah.
We stopped doing that in show 200, I think.
Yeah.
This was the first year of No Agenda Art.
Yeah.
It became when Randy Asher and Paul Couture were doing it pretty much by themselves.
Yeah.
It was nothing but pictures of us.
Yeah. In general, we don't like pictures of people. I mean,
generally,
some, and certainly not politicians. Like, I can already see, you know, someone's done Justin Trudeau as Hitler. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And it's that's a cliche.
Yeah. You like the Burma Shave, which was from Parker Pauly.
It would have been better if it had some punchline at the end.
Yeah, it didn't have a punchline. Exactly.
It would have said something, 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 no agenda would be the way the model should be. I also like the train, though, but that's just a pure evergreen piece, and probably it does have some AI in it.
Yeah. It's pretty. It's a pretty piece. That is definitely an evergreen. Nestworks, of course. Yeah, professionals. But just looking at the overview, you can see
it was a good selection.
Yeah,
and I thought there were at least three or four pieces we could have used.
Now scroll down, like to the almost to the bottom of that page, and go look at the submissions for 1591, and you see the difference. Everything AI on that page, and it becomes boring. You know, and when people use their God given talents. Yeah,
1591 is the selection sucks.
Yeah. Although everything's pretty and everything's, you know.
Well, I don't even think that's true looking back at it.
Yeah. But, you know, this is the danger. Well, I have some fun AI stuff we can talk about later. We can fight over it. But thank you very much, Sir Paul Couture, who, of course, also runs and has set up and run for, my goodness, how many years now, the art generator? How many years have been running this? But well over 12 years, I would say. NoAgendaArtGenerator.com. You can see all of these pieces of art at NoAgendaArtGenerator.com, or get a modern podcast app. You'll need it eventually. Don't worry. Did you see Google Podcast shut down?
Yeah. Well, that was expected.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's shutting down.
Well, Google does that routinely. They take something and it's just. Somebody goes over the numbers and says, well, why are we doing this?
And now they're going
to... maybe it's good. I think it was a good idea at the time. It was a lost leader. We get people to like us. Nah, screw it. Shut it down. Move it to this.
Well, it's like Reader. They also don't like RSS because it's open, freely available, distributed. And so now they're telling...
Why can't we be more like Apple?
No, like Spotify, because now they're moving the podcast into YouTube Music. And here's what they're telling podcasters. Yeah, man, we'll ingest your RSS feed. So they just want you to upload to YouTube, and so that they can, you know, sell ads and give you nothing or whatever it is they do. So don't do that. Don't be like YouTube and Google. Go to podcastapp.com, get a modern podcast app. You won't regret it. From the treasure category, we want to thank our executive and associate executive producers who have supported us today. And we see right off the bat, this must be an Instanite. You have the note, William Rowland from Spokane, Washington, with a cool grand. John, what does he say?
This is a double award request, he starts off, ITM.
Hmm.
The enclosed $1,000 check is for my wife's damehood. And I think Jay's got her on there. You might double check if you want. To be awarded posthumously as she died of liver cancer on July 9th.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that terrible?
Yes. Yeah.
We had discussed damehood in previous months, and she wanted to be called Dame Puma of the Eastern Washington Chasms. She would like shrimp and grits at the round table and love the F cancer in any Sharpton jingle. Maybe we can accommodate that in a minute. For myself, it seems the $1,000 threshold for me passed unnoticed last year. See accounting below. I wish to be knighted Sir Tigger Max of the Inslee Eastern Washington Archipelago.
Okay.
I request White Castle hamburgers and Kirkland Bordeaux at the round table. No jingles, no karma for me. A shout out to Sir Donald of the Fire Bottles, who hit us in the mouth. Oh, there you go. He's in Spokane. He hit us in the mouth in 2017, and William Rowland is in Spokane Valley along with Sir Donald. And I'm sorry for your loss, and thank you a lot for this this note and donation.
Yes, and we have both of you on the list for Nate for Knight and Daming, and it was Kirkland Chardonnay. Was that the?
No, the Kirkland Bordeaux.
Oh, Bordeaux. I'm sorry, because Bordeaux. Okay, all right. Yes, we have that. We're going to play the full respect for your
and the F cancer
and the F cancer for your posthumous Daming.
Getting lunch at Chipotle. The Tortoise in the race. Kim Kardashian, Sigourney Weaver,
Rush, R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
They're all jitty,
R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
There's no real conflict.
Resist. We must. Resist. We must. We must, and we will much about that be committed.
You've got karma.
And, well, you might as well do this next one. It's a double up karma, but this is a totally for you to read.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
The Brook of New York? I don't have anything. It just says 333-33. Well,
what is the name?
Oh, you mean from Total Metal... in Brooklyn, New York, Total Metal Resource, Inc. That's the place to go if you have any metal needs.
333-33. You've got... karma.
Probably a good business, Total Metal Resource, Inc.
Nah, if you need some metal, you know where to go.
You need some metal.
You might need some metal. Christopher Denon is in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, they should visit.
Yeah.
Christopher, if you need some metal, it's in your hood, man. Please give me jobs, Carmen. Been out of work since May 1st. Please call out Australian Brian of Hell's Kitchen and Greg the Socialite from Connecticut as D-bag.
Douchebag.
I'll give them both a D-bag there.
Douchebag.
Okay. Could you also both give them two to the head twice? There's consequences for being D-bags. Okay. Jeez. There you go.
Using a lot of ammo.
Yeah. Wasting ammo.
So here we go. Now we've already gone to associate executive producer here in a short show.
That went fast.
That was quick. Sir Ramsey Kane shows up from Brookfield, Wisconsin.
No stranger. Didn't he? Used to do the CDs? No Agenda CDs.
Yes, he was a CD guy.
Yeah.
He had a lot. He was. I still chat with him once in a while. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Sir Ramsey Kane here with eGunDirect.com. That's eGunDirect.com.
What is it?
Firearms, accessories, ammunition, and more. Oh. Visit our Butler, Wisconsin location or online at eGunDirect.com. Best price. P.S. John, we got the snail farm up and running. Thanks for the advice.
Oh, what advice did you give him?
Probably to start a snail farm. Or escargot, maybe.
A business of the future.
Yeah. Hey, it's good stuff.
Sir Niels den Olieschijk is in Breda, the Netherlands, 233.
Breda!
233-33. ITM, Sir Niels den Olieschijk from the great Bourgondic state of Brabant here. My smoking hot pre-MILF is pregnant with our cute little human resource for 33 weeks. Can I have an LGY karma for my girls? No agenda equals outstanding. How do?
Yay!
You've got karma.
Now we have SDG in Oakland, California, 222.22, a row of ducks, but, or swans, but no notes, so a double up karma will work.
You've got
double up
karma.
Sir Jeremy Chompati, Oakville, Ontario, Canada. The row of ducks, 222-22, wants to stay safe as a jingle. In the morning, gents, I leave today, a day before my 61st birthday on the 29th, for a four-week motorcycle trip of the Iberian Peninsula. Please.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, send pictures.
Watch out for wild pigs.
Is it rampant on the Iberian Peninsula?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's where they grow a lot of pigs.
No. Please accept this donation and keep up the excellent media deconstruction during my absence. It's unlikely I'll be able to listen until my return. Sir Jeremy Chumpati, Oakville, Ontario, Scandinavia. Will you please send in a donation when you're back and let us know that you're safe?
Stay safe!
There you go. There's your stay safe, brother.
Joe Clemens is in Anna, Texas, 222.17. First time donor, long time, blah, blah, blah. I have listened since show number one or before the daily source code. Please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
That is a long wait.
Yeah.
The daily source code.
That's 16 years. Well, thank you for sending the value. We appreciate it.
Whatever it's worth. The donation's actually 17, I guess. The donation is in honor of my daughter, Natalie Clemens, who passed away on another sad note on this day in 2017. Oh, that's where the 17 comes
came
from.
Yeah.
From the devastating genetic illness, cyber fibrosis, terrible product.
Not cyber, cystic.
Cystic. I said cyber. Wow. I think I dreamed up a new thing.
Yeah, it's a show title.
Cystic fibrosis, which is the worst.
Yeah.
The impact you two make in the universe is beyond measure. Thank you.
Thank you.
One example is inspiring producers to organize and attend meetups. Our household is now decorated with artwork, photography from other producers we met at a meetup. Well, that's interesting. As a petition signed member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, well, good for you. That's got the website's ae911truth.org. I request the spectacular WTC7 won't go away clip followed by a two to the head. I do request karma for all producers in grief. Sincerely, Joe Clemens in Anna, Texas.
I think I've seen pictures of his house during a meetup. It is indeed quite the shrine, really. It's quite fantastic. And did you see that RFK Jr. was on some mainstream like interview show and he said, you know, he was like, well, you're a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. And RFK is like, no, I don't know much about it at all, really. But I do know that Building 7 just kind of nothing fell on it. And the guy's like, yes, it did. Building 1 and 2 fell on it. He said, no, my office was there. No, it didn't fall. And so now he's a 9/11 truther, just to expand the op.
What about the host of the show? Did he turn? Turn him?
No, of course not. No, when I said, you know, he had some outro disclaimer. No, of course not. Can't have that.
So anyway, Kennedy had an office in the Building 7?
Either in it or near it. In it or near it. I'm not sure which one. Anyway, Joe, thank you very much. I pray for you.
What we need for a clip is pull it.
Yeah. WTC7 won't go
away. You've got karma.
Onward to...
I'll do this one. Andrew Hellenius, Iron River, Wisconsin, 221.22. In the morning, thank you for your courage. Please accept this Richard surrounded by ducks. 22122, get it? For show 1594 in celebration of 10 years of holy matrimony to my smoking hot wife, Hillary, and they never had a fight. We tied the knot 10 years ago today. A year prior, I threw her a surprise birthday party and proposed to her in front of our friends and family. Her being a gal who hates being the center of attention gave a choked up, sure.
I like that. Yeah.
Like, how could she say no? I don't
think women in general like to have this sort of type of proposal.
No, not in a party. No, they want control. They want it videoed. It has to be beautiful. Their hair has to be right. Everything.
Well,
has to
I think
be
the
just
way
perfect.
I think the way to just get some skywriters.
That's kind of hokey.
Why?
That's been done.
Will you marry me? It's cost about. Yeah, what does
classic.
It cost?
It's been done a million times.
Well, saying, hey, would you marry me has been done more than a million times.
No, what women don't want skywriters. They want a cliff overlooking the ocean at sunset with, you know, with music.
Okay, I'll give you a story.
This is donation segment bonus content. Your Powerball is 15.
The director of marketing, a woman that worked at PC Magazine, who, you know, I worked with a lot. She's great. she's got married.
You proposed to her?
No. No, but she has the proposal story of a lifetime, and I never told it before. She got married. I said, where'd you get married? I said, this guy, you know, it was like I was kind of befuddled by it. And she says to me, we went to India, and he proposed to me in front of the Taj Mahal. Mm-hmm. What was I supposed to do?
Exactly. Man, went all that way?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to get somebody, the way she described it, it's like, if you're put in that position at the Taj Mahal, kind of a monument to love, you don't have a choice. You have to say yes. So, men out there, you got somebody, you know, but first you got to somehow talk her into flying to India.
No, you don't get a sure.
Sure.
Sure. Sure. Lastly, I need to give he says, on a different subject, I was watching a clip of Headbangers Ball yesterday and was astounded to see how different Adam looked back then. Well, I had big hair. And I have one question. Adam, do you still have those leather pants? And I will say, I don't know what you were watching. I have never in my life worn leather pants on the Headbangers Ball, ever. So what were you watching? Send me a link. Lastly, I need to give a shout out to Midnight Mike, Joe, a.k.a. Flavortown, and Cretched from our Big Dumb Mouth podcast. They need some help on reaching 4 million subscribers. Why? Why do you need 4 million subscribers? It sounds like it's on YouTube.
No, it has to be.
We don't hit the algo unless we have 4 million subscribers and upload content every 15 minutes. Can I get some anniversary karma for my wife? Lord knows she deserves it for putting up with me. Bye, Andy Hellenius.
You've got karma.
Sure. Douglas Murray in Missoula, Montana. $200.51. Happy birthday, sister. Dame Ellen of the Dream Realm on Friday, the 29th. Cheers to the trolls. And thank you for your courage, John and Adam.
Colin Whidden, Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, $200. This will be my second donation from the Three Brothers Bagels. Hello, Three Brothers Bagels. Really appreciate listening to your show while hand-rolling sourdough bagels in Pittsburgh. Thanks, guys. Well, you are late if you're doing it now. It's kind of late. Don't you roll them early in the morning? You would think.
That's what I will.
Yeah, that's when I roll my bagels.
Well, Linda Lou Patkin from Lakewood, Colorado. Jobs karma: for a resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's imagemakersinc.com, or just find Lou Patkin under the show's producer list.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to give you that one. This is what I meant to hit.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
There we go.
Karma.
And those are executive and associate executive producers for episode 1594. These are credits that are real, and you can put them on imdb.com. Go ahead, take a look. There's hundreds of them, probably up to about 800 now. You can use it on your LinkedIn, put it on your resume, your CV, anything that you feel will be enhanced, and it's good forever. And if anyone ever questions that, all you have to do is get in touch with us and we'll happily vouch for you. Thank you. Our executive and associate executive producer for episode 1594. John is going to take us through the 50s and we'll get to our meetups and our nightings.
Yeah, let's start with Sarah That Sews in Sydney, Montana. Saddle Tramp, by the way, gets credit for the $150 donation. Not credit. Well, she gets a thank you. Richard Adams in Orem, Utah, $100. Turning 72 tomorrow, I might mention.
Nice.
He has a new motto: what doesn't kill you is everything so far. Aaron Tanner in Humble, Texas, $100. Some health karma for the end of the after the end. Make sure to give the health karma for Aaron, his youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. Sir Babalucci in Palmdale, California, $100. Kevin McLaughlin, and there we have it. You brought it up earlier. 8008. He's the lover of American boobs. He's the Archduke. And it's the watermelon donation.
There it is. We must be getting to the end if he's getting to water. But by the way, I have a great end of show mix that has a whole bunch of boob donations in it.
A lot of melons.
A lot of melons.
Suds and that's 8008 and Suds Insanity. in Watkinsville, Georgia, or Watkinsville, Georgia, 80. And this always had a meetup report. You want it? Why don't you read the meetup report?
Second Suds and Sanity meetup in Greensboro. No, yeah, we have a. Hold on a second.
No, is that coming? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I think we have an actual clip.
Dana Carroll or Dana Carroll.
Oh, no, Green Bay. Hold on. I have Green Bay. This is Greensboro. Second Suds and Sanity meetup in Greensboro, Georgia had a smaller turnout, but more intense conversation. We passed the hat to send the proceeds to the best podcast in the universe. We would like to work on pronunciation of the host location. See guide below. Oconee. Rhymes with Oconee. Oconee. Got it.
Well, there is a... missing from the list is the $271 donation from one of the meetups. Unless that's on here, I don't see it. No. And it's an accumulation of money. It's supposed to be a meetup report via email, so we'll read that later. But I should mention Dame Beth came in with 100 of that total.
All right.
So I just want to credit her. Dana Carroll, Laughlin, Nevada, 7227. Brian Rogers in Medford, New York, 70. And his pronouns are douchebag.
All right.
Derek Johnson in Denver, Colorado, 6969. Kevin McLaughlin, again, in Concord, North Carolina, really wants to run through these. 6006.
No melon. They
got no more melons.
Melons are over. We're out of melons. Yes, so we watermelon have no was melons. The last melon. Watermelon, we're out.
Do,
we're out
do you remember cantaloupe? I don't remember.
Yeah.
That.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely cantaloupe, for sure.
Definitely. Banstra in Nashville, Tennessee, 5993. Stephen Eisenman in Chicago, Illinois, 5555. Scott Nelson in Council Bluffs, Iowa, Sir Scott, 5001. And the following people are all $50 donors. And there's quite a few of them here. I'm just going to name them and give the location, starting with the Tact Squad in Columbus, Georgia. Amy Grohl in Burien, Washington. John Walter in Wenatchee, Washington. Jack Schofield in Yankeetown, Florida. Shauna Norberg in Seattle. Douglas Ellis in New York City. Forrest Scott Brinkley in Christiansburg, Virginia. Scott McCarty. In Lodi, California, Brian Emmenheiser in Lancaster, California, John Taylor in Florissant, Colorado, Sonny Pang in Lee, UK, Aaron Weisgerber in Bend, Oregon, Richard Gardner, who I think is in New York.
He's a sir. Yeah.
Sir Richard, of course. Michael Elmore in Gastonia, North Carolina, Anonymous in Davis, California.
Anonymous says something interesting. Was injured on flight 175 because of quote climate change. That would have been
turbulence.
Without your show, I would have never known the truth. Thank you. I'm going after the FAA for disregard for passenger safety. Would love any help you can muster. All right.
Yeah, this came up on the on Horowitz and DH Unplugged. He was unfamiliar with your thesis.
Well,
which is not a thesis. No, it's a fact.
It's on the FAA.gov website.
And it's probably worth repeating at some point again, because.
Well, very, very quickly, because I heard it and you almost explained it right. To combat climate change, instead of going down different levels and staying away from the turbulent air or flying above or, you know, above it before going down another, you know, to another flight level. The FAA has decided you can just coast down and just coast all the way down. Turbulence be damned. And the turbulence can often come from other jets, of course, other jet engines. They do cause turbulence. And so that's to save the planet. Enjoy your injury.
Zev Green in Teaneck, New York, a 50. Dame Girl Kyle, not Kylie. Stefano in Orangevale, California, and Sir Luke Rayner wraps it up from London, UK. Karma for all. And we do have some health karma to give here at the end.
Yeah, health karma, but also we have a night note from the previous show, Peter Eich. And he says, thanks to Jody, Dame of the 10 Key, we have made the hat trick, 2 meetups and an executive producer credit in 3 days. Sir CB and Sir Vix meetups soothe the soul with community warmth. Thank you too for your deconstruction over the years. ITM to all producers as well. I'd like to claim my knighthood with this donation. I will be Peter Sir Mizing of the DevOps, and he wants a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And a standard fizzy water at the round table. High fives with the community wherever we meet. Sorry for the long note. No, not a problem at all. Here's the health karma as requested.
You've got karma.
And thank you, of course, to everyone who came in under $50, usually for reasons of anonymity. I see a lot of $49.99s there today. We appreciate that. And everybody who came in with a sustaining donation, there are lots of them. You can choose one yourself. That does keep us going, and we appreciate that. And everybody, including our executive, associate executive producers, who supported us for this episode 1,594.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Shut up, Slay.
Shut up, Slay. It's a birthday, birthday.
Yes, we have a couple of birthdays to celebrate. Sir Jeremy Chumpati turns 61 tomorrow. Douglas Murray wishes his sister, Dame Ellen of the Dream Realm, a happy birthday tomorrow as well. And Richard Adams is celebrating tomorrow, the 29th himself, and he will be turning 72. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
It's your birthday, yeah.
Oops. Nope, sorry, no title changes. My mistake. I thought we had a title change. We do not. We have one dame, posthumous dame, and we have two knights. So let's get out the beautiful blade for this ceremony.
There you go.
Very nice. Nice choice. I like that one a lot. We request in spirit Miss Roland, but also Peter Eich and William Roland up on the podium. Thank you very much for supporting the best podcast in the universe. I'm very proud to pronounce the as Dame Puma of the Eastern Washington Chasms, Peter Sir Mizing of the DevOps, and Sir Trigger Max of the Inslee Eastern Washington Archipelago. For you, we've got Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys and Chardonnay. We have Shrimp and Grits, White Castle Hamburgers and Kirkland Bordeaux, Standard Fizzy Water, and of course, Ginger Ale and Gerbil, Sparkling Cider and Escorts, Bong Hits and Bourbon, Vodka Vanilla, and the Mutton and Mead. Go to noagendarings.com and Sir Trigger Max, if you want, would be happy to send you the Dame Ring as well. I think you should have that. So go to noagendarings.com, look at those handsome and beautiful knight and dame rings, and give us sizes and an address to send them to. We will get them to you post-haste, along with wax to seal your important correspondence. And, of course, as always, a certificate of authenticity. And thank you very much for supporting the best podcast in the universe.
No Agenda Media.
Meetups is where you go to find people who listen to the show, but also really to find your local community. And even though people come from hours and hours away sometimes, it is a great, great event. Everyone should attend one at least once. The Keeper and I, looks like we'll be attending. We will go to Indy, the Indy meetup. I think it's December 4th. That will be the confirmation will be forthcoming. So, you know, for the people who are there with, you know, 100 people, it seems, every single time, looking forward to that. You can start planning. And here is a report from Green Bay.
In the morning.
Sir Vix in the morning.
Bearing grape drink in the morning.
Jay from Green Bay. Hi, Adam.
Sam from Green Bay in the morning.
Hey, this is Sir Dan someone. Hey, John and Adam. Hey, just remember, we're not rafting at you. We're rafting with you.
Mr. Mofo in the morning.
It's Laura from Green Bay.
From Green Bay.
This is Jer in the morning.
Sir Broken Glass, thank you for all your hard work.
In the morning, this is Peter going for the hat trick. Happy to be here.
In the morning, this is Kyle. I am no longer a douchebag.
Hi, Adam and John. It's Jody, Dame Jody of the 10 Key, and I'm here again. Imagine that.
Hi, this is Alex, and I forgot the response. Thank you for in the morning.
Hello, my name is Wolfgang. I'm here at the No Agenda Meetup.
ITM producers, it's Baron Serfinam. And don't
forget to vote for Mike Gaston for Charleston City Council. Dame Jennifer, campaign manager.
I don't listen to the podcast. Please don't hit me in the mouth.
That's right. This is what happens at meetups. All of a sudden you get city council members and other producers, like not just any producer, but Dame Jennifer running your campaign. Beautiful. A note, the meetup for today at Alpharetta, Georgia, Cherry Street Brewing has been canceled. I'm not sure why, but just so you know, don't go. The Mile High meetup, though, is on 6:30 at Lincoln's Roadhouse in Denver, Colorado. The Nashville Pints and Pairing will be on tomorrow, 6 o'clock at Yazoo Brewing Company, Madison, Tennessee. The first Vancouver, Canada meetup, 7 p.m., Ludica Pizza, maybe Vancouver, British Columbia. That's tomorrow. Also, end of summer will be celebrated at McSorley's Wonderful Saloon and Grill in Toronto, Ontario. And on Saturday, the local 512 bringing in the fall at Doc's Backyard, Sunset Valley, Austin, Texas. Of course, Baron Scott of the No Agenda Armory. I wish I could attend, Baron Scott. Once again, we've missed on the scheduling. I'm in Houston this weekend, unfortunately. But it's a great meetup. Everybody should go. Also on Saturday, the Fractal meetup, Chicken and Pickle, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. We've got the Alberta meetup in the Buckingham in Edmonton, Alberta. And the Como, Come All, C-O-M-O, Twin Lakes Recreation Area in Columbia, Missouri. Oh, that's where Como comes from. That's Saturday, Central Ohio meetup, 5 o'clock at Dempsey's Food and Spirits. And on September 30th, Saturday, the 6th Northwest Houston meetup. Wow. I'm not going to be in Northwest Houston. That's too bad. Bogey's Billiards West. That's in Houston, Texas. Plenty more to come. We have all the way through November, as I can see on the list. You can see that list for yourself at noagendameetups.com. You owe it to yourself. If you listen to this podcast, you owe it to yourself to go meet your fellow compatriots. And whenever you do meet them, you'll immediately realize what you have. Protection. Because that's what you get from connection. NoAgendaMeetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
It's like a party. Like a party. Like a party. It is like a party. It really is. It's a party. I see you only have one ISO.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll beat yours. Why don't you play yours and see?
No, I have a whole bunch. No. You think
you have a whole bunch?
I got four.
We'll play them.
Okay. Yeah, here is.
Okay, bravo. Yeah, I give you a hug.
No, that's no good. You'll beat that easy. How about this one?
And I feel like our patrons just have really good taste.
No, that's no good. This is the one. Let me boost the sound a little bit. I brought all those other ones just as shills to play this one.
Extra, extra awesome.
Ooh.
It's pretty good, right?
I do like it.
Okay, you do. You do like it.
As opposed to just liking it, yeah, I do like it.
You do like it. Let's listen to yours.
How do we trust these guys?
Wow. That's kind of a tough call. That is kind of
extra, extra awesome.
How do we trust these guys?
I like yours better. I think how do we trust these guys is funnier. I like that.
It is funny. It's funnier.
It's funny. It's also the audio is better. So I give that to you. Give it to you.
Okay, we'll take it.
Give it to you. Hey, Meta unveiled its AI chatbots. Did you see the presentation?
I saw part of it, but I didn't.
Well,
follow it too closely.
This is Facebook falling on its face, as far as I'm concerned.
Throwing down the digital gauntlet in the AI race currently dominated by ChatGPT. Mark Zuckerberg showed Meta's recent cost-cutting has not stopped them keeping up with the integration of artificial intelligence into daily life.
Now, this is really interesting because... what is it, a chat? What are they doing? It's artificial intelligence. I mean, throwing down the gauntlet against ChatGPT, OpenAI, which as far as I know is free and they don't make any money on it. But hey, he's got an idea. What could it be?
I think that one of the most interesting questions for our industry over the coming decades is going to be, how do we unify these experiences of the physical that we have with this vibrant digital world to create something that is more coherent and just better than anything that we have today.
Is that one of the most important questions that we have in this industry today, John? Is that, would you say that is
not that I know of?
I don't think so either.
We got Meta.
Part of Meta's answer is their new chatbots, available in the U.S. as of Wednesday across Instagram.
There's too much chatting going on already on Facebook. Why do you need a chatbot?
Well, there's a payoff to this.
Facebook and WhatsApp. These bots search for answers using questions through Microsoft's Bing, and their responses will use Llama 2, a language model that the company made open source earlier this year.
It's going to help you. Let's check this out. So let's say you're planning dinner. You got Max the sous chef.
Oh, here, this is why you need it. You need the chat bots, and you have Max the sous chef.
Who can help you come up with a recipe.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what is this? What, do you have your own chef at the house? This is not a normal person.
Oh, yeah. No, you have a chef.
And help you come up with ideas. Yeah, so if you want to find a way to sneak some broccoli into your kid's dinner, Max has got you. You know, let's say you add too much salt to the recipe, he can help you balance it out.
This feels like a demo from like 1999.
Studio.
The intelligence may be artificial, but the personalities are being made to feel very real. Users of Meta's platforms will be able to interact with 28 chatbots that will feel familiar, as celebrities have agreed their voices and likenesses can be used in the feature. The goal is that AI characters will eventually appear in the metaverse as avatars, but Zuckerberg said these products would roll out slowly so as to deal with any privacy and safety concerns that arise.
So what this is you have some quasi-celebrity chef, you know, they're celebrities, so I don't know which Max this is, and he has allowed his image and his recipes, supposedly, to be built into the Llama model, and maybe even his voice, I don't know. And so that's what they're selling. It's like, oh, okay, so you get a celebrity chef. This is what you should do for wine. I mean, obviously, but they won't pay you. They're paying those guys. But that's what you want. I would love to have the John C. Dvorak wine chatbot.
Yeah, we can do it ourselves.
I think we can. Even if we just hire some asylum seekers to answer.
Well, we got a lot of app developers in the audience. One of them can crank this out for us.
Yeah, but will people pay for it? That's the question. I don't see any extra
Value for value, they will.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
So Barry Diller went on CNBC to talk about AI, and this is a very different kind of AI. This is what you, on the last show, said will change the art world. But it's all about copyright. And I thought it was interesting because he had a couple of things to say, and he hates AI, hates everything. He just hates everybody.
He's you and him.
Yeah. And I'm kind of liking him now.
Let me ask about AI, because you have been quite
AI,
public about
AI. Or Shmai. I mean, I'm so sick of it.
You're sick of it? Well, you were ready to sue.
I love that. Already I'm liking him. AI Shmai. I'm so sick of it. I'm sick of it.
Or Shmai. I mean, I'm so sick of it.
You're sick of it? Well, but you were ready to sue.
Oh, no.
You all
want to do that.
You're going to sue.
But I'm just, you know, the gobbling up of every piece of noise about AI infecting your toenails is not that it is not transformative. It certainly will be over time. But I'm just tired of hearing this kind of this hype noise. As to litigation.
You were trying to put together a group of publishers.
Yes.
To sue ChatGPT and others.
No, what we want to do is a very simple thing.
Okay.
Copyright. The copyright law has in it something called, am I boring you? Has something called fair use.
Right? There was someone on the set looking at the laptop. He's like, am I boring you?
Fair
use means that you can take an excerpt thing, something, and not pay for it. Fair use needs to be redefined, because what they have done is sucked up everything. And that violates, we believe, the base of the copyright law. All we want to do is establish that there is no such thing as fair use for AI, which gives us standing.
Right.
Once we have standing, then depending upon how this works out over time, there is at least status. Right now, we have no status. They got all our stuff.
How do you
now,
do it?
Most companies have now said, as we have, our Dotdash Meredith, right, which is the kind of largest publisher, we've said, you can't do this anymore. And they won't from now on, but they got all the old stuff.
Yeah, do they have to pay you for that?
So if in fact, if you violate the copyright law, like you write something, you make something, and somebody takes it, literally appropriates it, we believe that is simple wrong.
Okay, so
that's in the copyright law. Once you get that, then at least you have standing. That's all we want
to
achieve.
But today we have to pay you for that? Or how do you make the AI?
Well, let me ask you a question. If you have copyright on something,
but what's like,
there's some kind of exchange. Yeah. Now, right now, all these conversations that we're having and others are having with all of the chatters, they say, yeah, we're happy to make arrangements. Then what percent of zero would you like? Because there's no revenue.
That's the point. There's no revenue. He says, how much percent of zero will you want? Because no one's making any money.
No one's making any money.
Yeah, of course. Now, he makes a classic mistake. Classic mistake by now he's going to prognosticate about the future of AI.
The next thing to pay attention to on AI is not search and chat and stuff like that. It's when it goes from research to action, when it can autonomously get things done for you.
Right.
Think of travel, being able to say, I want to go to Istanbul. It knows enough about you, enough about all of your preferences, that it can basically ask you one or two questions and then actually go and execute the transaction. Right now, it's research. When it turns to action, everything changes.
How many decades have we heard this?
This is a never ending.
Yeah.
The holy grail, what he described.
The smart agent. It'll work on your behalf. When your fridge is out of milk, it will automatically order new milk for you. I have heard this for decades.
It's the old, hey, hello, what do you want? So I'm the Maytag repairman. Well, I didn't call for repairman. No, your washer did.
Yeah. There was one interesting article that was in the Business Insider. You know, we had the smartest people in the world talk about AI with the senators behind closed doors. You know, as Elon Musk said, you know, it's very important to save the world. So that's why you need the smartest people in the world in the room. And now we have a leak. We know what was discussed. Have you seen this?
No.
Several tech leaders descended upon Capitol Hill last week to discuss the rapid expansion of generative AI, which, as far as I know, does not exist yet. It was a mostly staid meeting until the potential harms from Meta's new Llama 2 model came up. During the discussion, attended by most of the Senate's 100 members, Tristan Harris, remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Now he's one of the most smartest human beings in the world.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology said he recently had engineers take Meta's powerful large language model, Llama 2, for a test drive. After some prompting, Harris said that a chat with Llama 2 came back with a detailed walkthrough of how to create anthrax as a biological weapon.
Oh, please.
According to one person familiar with the forum and two senators present, that prompted a testy exchange between Harris and Zuckerberg. Most specifics of the exchange between Harris and Zuckerberg have not been previously reported, though Harris receiving directions from Llama 2 about an unidentified biological weapon was noted by the Washington Post. And of course, Zuckerberg then hit back and said, you know, you can get this on YouTube. If you want to find out how to make anthrax, you can get it on YouTube. So this is what they were talking about. And I believe it. They're so stupid. Yeah, this is how stupid they are.
Well, it's definitely the stupid part, I believe.
It's stupid. They're stupid. The whole thing is stupid. And it's going to change our world. Can't wait. Can't wait.
for overtime.
Well, we're only overtime because we had a huge pause. You think we're overtime, but
no, I bet we're way over. The pause is only 5 minutes.
The pause was 10 minutes, but would you like to play one clip or do you want to leave on this downer note?
Clips, but I want to, I'll tease the clips.
Why don't you play a clip? Let's play.
Well, let's play the second part of a clip. I just want to bring up this, you know, Menendez
yes.
has been kicked out and I have two clips, but I just want to play the second one, which is Schumer commenting on Menendez. He doesn't even know the guy's name. He calls him Menendel.
Is this the update?
Menendel. Oh, Schumer.
I got you.
Senator Chuck Schumer Menendel. Broke his silence at a press conference on Wednesday.
Like you, I was just deeply disappointed, disturbed when I read the indictment. But we all know that four senators, there's a much, much higher standard. And clearly, when you read the indictment, Senator Menendez fell way, way below that standard.
Okay. I get to do a 30-second clip. This was
Senator Menendez.
That's fantastic. This was Matt Gaetz, who's been all over the mainstream lately with a big mouth. And this, I have to say, this was one of the funnier things he's done.
You are your record. And our record in this country right now is $33 trillion in debt facing $2 trillion annual deficits. We're in so much debt, we're driving up deficits so fast, we are devaluing American money so rapidly that in America today, you can't even bribe Democrat senators with cash alone. You need to bring gold bars to get the job done. Just so that the bribes hold value.
Come on. Well done.
Good move. Yeah. Well very done. Funny. Well the guy's done. The guy's a showman.
They're all showmen. He's just funnier. Yeah, that is our deconstruction for today. We're over time. But we do have end of show mixes coming up from Michael Wolf, Sir Michael Anthony, D's Last, and Sound Guy Steve. That'll be the Melon Mix. Stick around for it. We also have noagendastream.com continuing at noagendastream.com, trollroom.io, or in that modern podcast app, which you got alerted for and you're listening to still, Grimerica, episode 622. And later this evening at 7 o'clock Central Time, Abs in a Six-Pack with Sir Seat Sitter, Larry Bidener and Sir Carl with a K. That's my promotional messages for you. And I am coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country in FEMA region number 6. And I say in the morning, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Sunday with another episode of the best podcast in the universe. Thank you again for all the value you sent to us. We appreciate it. Until then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such. And remember, Dvorak.org/NA.
Destroy New York City. Destroy New York City. President Biden is coming to the city, and we're going to destroy this beautiful city that's the economic engine of the entire country. Destroy. New York City.
I'ma tell y'all a secret, New York City. Keep this on the down low, but your mayor is a Freemason. I was just initiated as a Master Mason into the Prince Hall Grand Lodge, aka Freemasonry for us Black brothers. They also initiated the Chief of Police, the Police Commissioner, and other powerful melanated dudes running this this town. Ain't no white boys up in this club. No women neither. Only brothers. And we have the ceremony right up in Gracie Mansion. The haters out there is saying that public servants should not be doing no segregated secret society rituals on government property. Man, y'all just mad y'all wasn't invited. Unlike all these illegal immigrants. Anyway, I don't even know what all these symbolisms means. I just like to dress up and feel important. So maybe now y'all finna treat me with the respect with which I deserve. Cause I'm more than just the mayor. From now on, I am the grand architect of New York City. But don't tell nobody.
Lying about the carbon emission emitting. Judas broken Libya with 10K dead in floods. How many are missing? D-Dub or a natural disaster? Pointing out the inconsistencies is what I'm after. Worrisome winter wave. Have no fear, but be brave. Don't you know climate's gonna change? Corrupt initiatives forcing us in many ways. Even a controlled burn, we were not surprised. Listen to the podcast, just open up your eyes. Never really worked, satellite phones and fire hurricanes. Superstorms, don't apologize. You jerks, Tulsi alarm, no alert. System was activated, Oprah and the Rocks. PSA should be more hated. Asking the public to donate to the cause while purchasing land and tax shelter created the laws. You might learn to lean into the tech. Dry hydrants, producing more water. One time $700 check given to the people used as fire. Huh. Mayor was a dipshit, sticking to the script, pushing out the people. You were burning a Maui and you will not get away with it. All we go is 9-11, 2.0, hate never dies, it just hides.
Did you know there are over 40 different types of melons out there?
Kevin McLaughlin in Concord, North Carolina says honeydew melons. He just wrote that in there for some reason.
He likes melons.
Golden delicious melons. The Galia melon. Horned melons. How many melons that are there in the world?
There are over 40 different types of melons.
Summertime is the perfect time to show off your melons, ladies. Honey globe melons. That's honey globe melons.
Tasty.
Camouflage melons. Nice. Choppers in aisle 3. Camouflage melons. Jade Dew melon donation. Jade Dew is another little melon. And I've had those. They're pretty good. I think the Tuscan melon is my favorite.
Ah, you just love melons.
The Picasso melon. Calabash melons. That's calabash melons. The Kiss melon. It's got a big tongue that comes out of it. The papaya melon. The Balin melon. The Ubari King melon. Autumn sweets. Autumn sweets. The melon of choice for connoisseurs. He's going to run out of melons, by the way. I don't know how many melon varieties.
I don't know. I think this. He's got.
But he hasn't even said watermelon yet.
Exactly.
Cantola melon, another one I've never heard of, but you know.
How long will he be able to come up with melon names?
Korean melons.
I love his melon assortment.
Gak melons.
The ananas melon.
I've never had one. The Sprite melon. Charente melons, which is literally a melon. Kevin McLaughlin's back, this time promoting the snap melon for you keeping score.
I love melon!
Dvorak.org/NA.
How do we trust these guys?